The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Let's keep this going, at least for today.
That's what convinces me you told Alicia I was going to quit the podcast.
From Gabe's basement, where soon he'll be quitting the podcast just because Juan's a bitch. You're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box with Juan, John, and Gabe.
Beedoo, 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 beedoo.
I don't know why, but it is.
It cracks me up when I hear it too, which is about once every 3 months, because that's about how often I listen
to it. No, I know. About how often you want to be on the show
too. Oh, that's...
Faggot. I'm sorry. Oh man. We're recording, by the way.
Oh, okay. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 62 of Thinking Outside the Long Box. I'm Gabe.
I'm Juan. And I don't know.
I'm John.
It sounded all like
John. I know.
John.
I'm just making a big voice because John has a big voice.
Sounded like somebody familiar, but it
wasn't. I'm John.
Harry. Well, just
he sounded like the oh, shit. He's always plays a drunk guy. Fuck.
You?
No. I'm hungover, not drunk. That's the difference.
Here, we'll just to fill it out. Hi, I'm Michael Kirk.
Hi, I'm Tim. Hey, buddy, it's Dom.
None of these voices are appropriate to their voices. That's the best part.
Dom Chinese? Oh, buddy.
I would
do
a voice for Marika, but she'd probably punch me. So
I called her a midget the other day. To her face. That's I'll tell you that we were talking to her face.
It's a good way to get hurt.
We saw her at Free Comic Book Day. Her and Matt came out.
Yeah, they came by like the week Matt graduated. They came and hung out for a while. It was awesome.
Nice.
Because like Matt went just like straight radio silent because he was doing finals for like his senior project and shit. And then like a week later, Marika posts this picture on Facebook that's like, this is Matt for the day. And he's just in front of his PlayStation 4, just veg. He's like, fuck working at things right now. Brain done for like 2 weeks.
I was is he going to be your sugar daddy now? Is he going to take care of you? She's all, fuck yes, he's going to take care of me. I put his ass through college, she said.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
You missed a good fucking Free Comic Book Day.
I know.
It was pretty cool. It was very fun.
What's dumb is, like, I missed a really good Free Comic Book Day to then, like, quit that job and go get a new job. So, I don't know.
Oh, you didn't do nothing for the party that day for your daughter?
Oh, no. Yeah, that was on Saturday. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so, yeah, that was my kid's birthday party. Yeah. That was fun. We went swimming and, like, just kids everywhere. Nice. Lots of screaming.
Yeah, I'm out on that.
I had a lot of fun, though.
I'm out on swimming. No, I'm out on kids.
So, like, swimming with kids at, like, the rec center isn't really swimming. It's, like, farting around in the shallow end of the pool and, like, just kind of being in, like, a weird bathtub for, like, 3 hours. A bathtub
bathtub full of kids. Yeah. That sounds really odd.
What's weird about a bathtub full of kids? It's where I keep all my dead kids. Okay.
Wow.
So as I have alluded to, I took a new job. Like,
you didn't allude to it. You pretty much said it.
I know, but like, I took a new job as a kitchen manager at this restaurant, right?
As a bitch.
I'm not a bitch.
Who doesn't fucking
dude, I'm say opening or a restaurant. Hang out or
do, I don't give a fuck what you're doing.
Someday you're gonna live your dream of opening a business. And you're not
going
to
have time.
You're not going to be able to
do
anything.
I'm
going to
have time for,
like,
for the other two things that I still have to have time for.
For like 2 months, you're not going to have time for shit, I assure you. No.
I made a promise to myself that whatever happens in my life, this would go uninterrupted.
This is not interrupted. I'm right here. I have more notes than
you forgot
than
a lot
average.
Of things. You have more notes than me, to be totally honest.
Like, I'm doing pretty good. Anyway, so we got, there's these things called Cambros. They're like giant plastic storage tubs. Okay. And I got some really big ones to store flour and sugar in, right? But they're big enough that they have to have the child warning label, like with the little kid, like dunking into the bucket so you don't accidentally like drown. It says, don't let children play in this. They could drown or something.
Okay.
And like, you have to leave the sticker on for the health department. Like, they'll get mad at you if you take it off. So one of the inexperienced guys was about to take it off. I'm like, don't take it off. We have to know that that's what we drown children in. Okay. And the guy who's like my sous chef, like my second, he goes, oh, man, I can think of way easier ways to drown a kid.
That's true.
I was like, yeah, this is where I need to be working.
So. Fuck those guys, by the way. I'm just saying.
Nah, you're going to eat our food and be like, nah, I'm okay with this.
Nah,
guys.
You didn't invite me anywhere, so.
I can't yet.
Yeah, I know.
Not till next week.
I see how it is. It's all right. Don't worry about it.
Not till
anyway,
next week.
Let's talk about something.
All right. Should we get the should we get the big thing off the table?
So I want to save that. Let's.
Okay.
So I actually got an email from Adam Workman, who I don't think I know, and I might know, but I'm very bad at knowing if I know you or not, which sucks.
me too.
But he emailed me, I think, a few weeks before this and said, hey, I enjoy the podcast, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then he emailed me after that a couple weeks, and he's like, hey, I listened to every single episode in descending order. So he went from the better shows, and I don't want to say the best because they're not really that great. They're just better than what we started. So,
well, I mean, they're the best for us, and they're probably the best we're ever going to give these people. So.
So he went from good to kind of bad, and I was like, God damn, that is commitment, those 60-something fucking episodes.
And they're all like six and a half hours long.
I was like, God damn, you were committed, my friend. But we've talked...
Somebody has an office job.
I think we've talked about it before, but he wanted to know what our secret origin was. Because he says, you always ask somebody when we do an interview, you know, what's the secret origin of whatever you're doing?
So I was at this gay porno store with my dick in the glory hole.
Wow.
Oh, wait.
And there was a strap on. A midget,
and
which
one,
was kind of like
one said, "You a podcast?"
The midget was a little foreshadowing. I didn't know what that meant at the time.
And then Tim was like, "Let me draw this."
Don't move.
Don't move. And I was like, "All right."
So in the beginning, I didn't even know what a podcast was there for a long time. I was reading Kevin Smith's book while I was still working for this other company, while I was probably in Texas or something like that, while I traveled. And he talks about it in his book, Kevin Smith's book. And I was like, what? I don't know what that is. So I went and listened, and I was listening to Jay and Silent Bob Get a Job, I think. Jobs, I think, is what their first one was.
Yeah.
And then they had another one where it was them two, and then their wives as well, that they no longer have anymore. Those are two defunct podcasts. But I was like, fuck, it sounded cool. Like, what could be better than sitting around with friends and just talking shit? Like, not like a... You know, I don't know how to say, like, just nothing prepared. Like, we're talking about things that we like, we enjoy. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? Like, I don't know. It just seemed cool. I was like, fuck, that seems really cool. But I traveled so much. I never sat in one place where it was like, this would make sense unless it's me talking to myself. And then that didn't sound fun. And so.
Oh, no. Mark Maron does a pretty good job of that.
Well, but he's Mark Maron.
Yeah, you're not
Joe
as interesting
Rogan
as Mark
is Joe fucking yeah. Rogan. I mean, I don't have the money to go do these things that these guys do and then talk about. But it was cool. Once I left that job, I've known John for fucking at least 10 years or so at this point. So we're friends. He actually got me both jobs at the fish places that I ended up working, and he left to do his comic book store shortly after I left to sell cars.
You what?
Yeah. Somebody take a drink. It's too early for me to take a drink, so somebody will have to do that
for me. It's not too early. It's too late for you to take a drink. You're like, so hungover. Yeah,
I'm not so hungover, just a little bit. But I never had a steady comic book shop because I was always gone so much. So I would do my Wednesday pickups in different states. And when I quit, I was like, fuck, I don't know what I'm going to do, you know, but, or I didn't know where to go. And I think we had just moved to Eaton and I was like, I don't want to go to fucking Fort Collins. That seems like a long ways to go all the time. And I don't know how I found you guys, at the Nerd Store. I don't know if it was through a Google search or something, but I found you and we had talked cause I thought you, every time I went in there, you were like there, like you were. I didn't know. I thought you owned the place.
I wish.
I didn't know that it was fucking. That it was fucking. What's his name? The other fucking idiot, Travis. There you go. I didn't know it was his spot because he was never there when I went there. He was never behind the register when I did see him. And your wife was there a few times, and I was like, oh, these. You know, that's pretty cool. They own the shop. And we'd talk every single time I went in there. You'd tell me, you know, what you recommended and blah, blah, blah. And I think from – it's not a very exciting origin story, but this – but, it, you know, from there it was, you know, hey, we should – have you ever thought about doing this? And I think you told me you used to do one at the time.
I've done a couple, so.
Right. And I think we – one night I brought it up again, and you're like, fuck it. Let's just do it. And one night we – that I think that day I pulled a backboard out. Which I have hanging in my house now.
And we, like, brainstormed,
and,
like,
yeah, how ideas. It would be, yeah. How it would go, and how long we thought it would be, which was fucking way
an
off.
Hour.
Way the fuck off. But, I mean, it's, like I said, it's not very exciting, but it's essentially how, I mean, we met at a comic book shop. I've known John for fucking ever. And you didn't meet him until probably...
like
three or four something episodes in, because he was just sending us stuff via email.
And then we went to his house to record.
Yeah.
And then I was in love because his whole basement was full of comic books. I was like, be my lover.
And he dropped his pants.
And then we were back to dick sucking. No, for me, like, I'm really the only part of the story that, you know, doesn't get touched on there is that before this podcast, I had done a couple of other podcasts. Like I did one that was called The Punk and the Pastor. That was me and a friend of mine that's a pastor. And all we did was review horror movies,
right?
Which was amazing. And then I did a really short-lived one with my friend Nate Ellis, where we reviewed horror comic books.
We need to have him on more often, by the way.
He's super smart.
I like Nate.
His podcast is really cool, too. It's called, like, Bridge Over the River Kauai. Which is like a play on like words, but they review movies that like probably shouldn't necessarily be reviewed, like kind of like romantic comedies and stuff like that. But like in this really weird, like this is why it works as a film sort of way. Like it's really cool.
Nice.
Like they do a pretty cool show.
Like a noir podcast almost.
Yeah. They're pretty smart. Like they know a lot.
I like Nate when he came on the few times that he's been on. He's informative, but not boring.
That dude has forgotten more shit about the Fantastic Four than I have ever known. Like he has the full run of the Fantastic Four. He knows a shitload about Marvel.
The
comics.
Full run. That is fucking crazy.
It is ridiculous.
And this is not Nate who doesn't listen. Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
This is a different Nate.
Yeah, Nate Ellis. Who I think he works at the Mayan in Denver. Like the
is that a restaurant?
No, it's like an art theater.
Oh, that's cool too.
Yeah,
then,
like,
yeah,
I think he works at a movie theater if I remember right. So
nice.
Oh, that's cool.
Side note: I hate Kauai. It's boring.
Not
there.
Not the island.
I
like,
know. I'm
Kauai,
just
like cutesy.
Kauai
in
Leonard.
Japanese. No, like Hello Kitty. Like Hello Kitty.
Oh, buddy, I was watching. Side note. So like I said, it's not super exciting, but that's kind of how
is
we
what
met. Nothing too secret-y about that.
I mean, except for the whole, like, gay porno stuff.
Yeah,
part.
The midget and all that shit. Yeah, I'm with you. I watched Dave Chappelle, both of the things the other day that you reminded me of that with the Hello Kitty.
Holy shit, those are gay.
What'd he say? We fucking bombed them and they've been drawing Hello Kitty ever since.
Dude, he says some shit in there that you know is just like, Oh.
Oh, yeah. I was watching with my friend Devin, and he's like, oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. I think there was just as much laughter going on as just, like, stunned, like, ow.
Oh. The fucking first, after the first joke, he's all, man up. Come on, fucking man up. If you're not going to man up, you're not going to make it through this fucking special.
Yeah. It's not getting any better. It's going to get worse. He rapes, but he helps.
And he helps more than he rapes.
Just the whole thing is awesome.
I like that his superhero ended up being Bill Cosby in there, and it was fucking perfect.
You know, it's funny because, like, this isn't in my notes, but Netflix has been putting a ton of stand-up comedian specials on, like the one-hour specials, and they have been unbelievably good.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, literally every great comedian that you can think of. Like, I was listening to the radio yesterday, and they were talking about how on Tuesday, like, Hasan Minhaj from The Daily Show has a new special coming out. The first stand-up that Tracy Morgan has done since he was in his car accident came out last week.
I haven't watched that yet.
I haven't watched it yet, but it's...
I rewatched the Trevor Noah one. He's fucking always funny. Yeah,
the Trevor Noah one's amazing. The Louis C.K.'s 2017 is super funny. You either love Louis C.K. or you hate him.
Yeah, like, I love comedy. I just don't... I don't know. He's got a weird personality. I don't know.
I love him.
I don't know.
He cracks me up. He reminds me of all of my friends.
I love stand-up comedy, though. I absolutely love stand-up comedy.
It's funny. On the Fresh Air interview with Hasan Minhaj, where he's talking about his special, he was talking about when he, like, really discovered what stand-up comedy was. But he was talking about how before that, he thought stand-up comedy was just what Seinfeld did in the commercial bumpers. You know, what's the thing about cupcakes?
Right, right.
And he's like, that's not funny. Just go back to the show.
Side note, I thought it was funny.
Yeah. Jerry Seinfeld is mildly amusing occasionally. Oh,
I love Jerry Seinfeld. I love his show. Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee is fucking amazing.
See, I haven't seen any of that. Like, my dad, like, religiously watched the Seinfeld show.
Right. Well,
and I thought it was, like, kind of funny.
Right.
And, you know, when I was a teenager, like, any of, like, the dick jokes and stuff were hilarious. But in general, now that going back as an adult, it's like, I mean, that's funny, but man, you people are fucking shallow. Like, grow the fuck up, man.
Of course, Gabe. That's where we go to our entertainment for. It's funny.
They're obnoxious.
Of course. That's the whole point of the show. That's the whole point of the show. It was, but Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee isn't it's not like a show.
It's like a YouTube thing. Yeah. I've seen like a couple of them. It's just, they're really funny.
Yeah, it's not like a scripted thing. It's just them getting coffee, which is cool. I enjoy it.
You know what? There's like a late night TV show host that's like a British guy, and he does a YouTube show where he has like famous people sing in his car.
Oh, yeah.
Those are
the bigger guy.
Yeah, those are really funny too.
Oh, fuck. I don't remember his name.
No, don't try to remember, because that'll give John Still's Radio Hour.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Some Radio Hour. In his actual episode, he says, you know, welcome to the show, Old Still Radio Show, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, for thinking outside the long box, Old Still Radio Hour, my bad. It's funny.
That's funny. Awesome. Affecting change on other shows.
He's looking for a new co-host.
Be like, hey, I got a format change for you, John. Oh, man. So,
you want to talk about the big one? Fuck, I'm okay talking about the big one.
No, well, I got a ton of stuff, so.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do, actually. So, Split, the movie Split.
I still have not seen it.
I haven't seen it yet either, but we're going to do a big spoiler alert for those of you that haven't seen Split. So, my daughter went to see it. We talked about it on the show.
Right.
Where she got in trouble and everything.
Right.
But she hated the movie.
Right.
Okay. So,
which I think has been like critically an amazing movie. So, if I think that a lot of people have loved that movie.
And there's a reason why. There's a really important reason why.
I think I heard this.
So, I read an article about this, and the reason my daughter hates the end of Split is because she doesn't get it. Because she's never seen Unbreakable.
Right.
And it happens in the same universe. And the big reveal at the end of Split is that, like, Mr. Glass shows up or something like that. And you come to the realization that the whole movie is an origin story for a new character in the Unbreakable universe.
Right.
So of M. Night.
Because he creates himself as some sort of hero like or something some sort like that.
Yeah, like super strong hero yeah. or whatever. So as far as M. Night Shyamalan movies go, Unbreakable is arguably the best one. And that this is like a sequel or like even like just tied into the right. universe.
It's kind of what
more than a decade later
right.
is a fucking genius
that
idea.
Nobody knows about.
And nobody knows about it.
It's kind of like what Cloverfield Lane is to Cloverfield. They're not really like part one and two. They just kind of happen together, know, at the same yeah. time. Yeah,
and
yeah.
you don't even really realize it. Like the way they released 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Right.
You didn't know that it was a Cloverfield movie until you saw the title,
right?
And then even like 3/4 of the way through the movie, you're just like, I don't get how this is tied to the other movie,
right?
And then you get to the end, and it's like, oh,
yeah, okay,
alien invasion.
I like the idea. I like the low what a lot of people have been doing is low key like tie-ins here and there.
Yeah,
Life, although maybe it's not a Venom prequel or whatever, it can be, and it's not advertised that way, which I like.
Yeah.
You know, I had no idea what I just thought Split was about a crazy dude, and that
Me
was
too.
It.
Yeah.
And when I started hearing things about it being kind of tied into the Unbreakable and things like that, I was like, well, fuck, that makes it more interesting to me.
Exactly. It makes me actually want to watch
right,
it.
Right, exactly. That's if you would have presented it that way, I might have gone, meh, this might suck. But the more and more people see it, and the more and more you hear about it and people get excited about it, that's what draws me into yeah. it.
I feel like it's going to be one of those movies that, you know, would have been called a cult classic like 20 years ago, where
right.
it has better video sales, but which would now be more Netflix views, you know.
But it still made a lot of money, I think.
It did make quite a bit of money. I mean, I think people in general are just starved for like entertainment at the movie theater.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's been some really big numbers coming in with, even like that King Arthur movie, it doesn't look super great, but I mean, it raked in.
I don't think it did make a lot of money.
It didn't make a ton of money, but it still did better than most movies.
I think they considered it a flop.
Yeah, well.
It's weird.
I don't know. I thought it came in at like in third place opening weekend, but that's against like the second week of Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Like,
you know what took down Guardians this week?
What's that?
Alien.
Yeah.
Which I hear. You know, I hate that. I don't like critics. I don't like whether they're good or bad. I'm not a fan. I almost think sometimes that critics should not give their opinion until after the movies come out, because it stymies things. It stymies things for people, because Aliens is, I haven't seen it yet, but Aliens made a lot of money so far, and I hear that it's while it's a little more gory than normal, it does go back to kind of its alien roots.
Right.
And a lot of people are enjoying it. It's got like a 70-something percent on Rotten Tomatoes, which is really good for a movie.
Yeah.
And I think, though, that because I read on comicbook.com and a few other reviews that just slammed the movie. And I think that takes people away. Like, you're not doing the movie business any kind of service by doing that, in my opinion. You're drawing people away, and you're making people not spend their money at the movies, which is good and bad, I guess. Some people say, oh, thanks for saving me from going to see that shitty movie, when they don't even really know if it's shitty or not.
Yeah. I think my problem is there's a level of like over criticism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it used to be that the film critics that I knew about were like Richard Moulton, because he had his TV show,
right.
and Siskel and Ebert, because
right.
they had their TV show.
Right.
And I knew that from watching movies that those three guys had reviewed, that Gene Siskel's opinions of movies were very similar to my opinions
right.
of movies. So I would watch both shows. I would take in the information, but if Gene Siskel said he really liked it and the other two guys hated it, I would probably go watch the movie because I knew that we had similar
right,
opinions.
Right.
Whereas now, like, I couldn't tell you a single person that reviews
right.
movies for Comic Book, you know, for CBR or for, you know,
they're
Entertainment
just,
Weekly
they're
or
just
anything.
Names.
They're
just random
people.
Names.
They're just
yeah,
random
yeah.
people throwing out their opinion. And there's no, like, relationship to develop where you can say, okay, these critics are people that I trust.
Right.
Like, I trust their opinion because I like it. I think because of the internet and because of the ease with which any asshole can put out their opinion on a movie. And a lot of, I mean, I get comic books for review, you know, months in advance.
Right.
You know, I mean, I still get all that stuff. So I could very easily read a comic book that doesn't come out for like another like 2-3 weeks, write a review about it and post it.
Right.
No matter what my opinion is. And just because there's people that, you know, Google search, you know, Secret Empire review, we might just randomly come up. They've never listened to the show. They don't know who I am.
Right.
They don't know anything about it. They just read that I hate this comic because I hate everything. Like, you know, so there's because of the ease with which anybody can put their opinion out there, I think it makes it so that it's significantly easier for negativity to like directly affect like a movie.
Oh, yeah.
And to say, okay, this guy didn't like Alien Covenant, so I'm just going to piggyback off of his review and not even necessarily watch the movie kind of thing. It just it's frustrating.
So I'm okay with opinions because we throw out our opinions all the time.
No, I get that.
I feel like there should be a part where you wait until at least the movies come out and then throw your article out there, because you at that point, the people who are going to see it for opening weekend, those are the most excited people. They're going to hear your opinion, but also they're going to see how the movie's doing, how much money it's made, you know, and the grade that it's getting for people that are coming in and out of the movie. And I think that's way more information than the 10 people who got to see it before it ever came out. You know what I mean?
That's kind of my problem, is it's not the 10 people that get to see it before it comes out. It's like the 1,500 people that get to see it before it comes out. And then the other 100 or 200 people that are just reposting shit.
Right.
You know, they've never seen it. They have no idea. Like, I mean, I've seen people repost reviews of movies that don't come out for a week, and I know for a fact that they haven't seen the movie. So why do you give a shit? You know? It would be interesting, I think, if you couldn't put a review for a movie out until like Monday.
Right.
You know, the Monday after it came out. I think it would make the landscape of like movie reviews significantly different, because you're not trying to scoop that this is a shitty movie.
Right.
You're just genuinely giving your opinion.
Yeah, of course.
The opinions of people that have already seen the movie, like normal human beings, but that's never going to happen.
So if we ever put a movie out, fuck critics.
Well, no, we'll just say no reviews till after the movie comes out.
I like it, Kevin.
Like how many more people would have gone to see Tusk if there were no pre-screening reviews of it?
Oh, I don't know. Probably a little more at least.
Yeah,
I mean,
probably at least another like 50 to 100,000 ticket sales of people that are just like, hey, it's a new Kevin Smith movie. Sure, it sounds super weird, but let's go check it out just because. But there were so many negative reviews of it before the movie even fucking came out that people were like, and that movie was awesome. I don't care what anybody says.
You hear that about any, you know, small, giant movie. You hear about it all the time. And for me personally, it's like I don't want to hear what you have to say. I just want to go see the movie and decide whether I like it or not myself. You know, I like, and that's the thing. It bothers me before I've seen a movie, but I like hearing what people have to say after I've seen it. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, okay, I missed that part, or this. It's cool that you felt this about that, but I don't want you to try and ruin the experience for me before I go see the movie.
Like, I hate speculating on if a movie is going to be terrible or not just based on the trailer.
I agree with you, but we've never seen the movie, and I don't know that we've ever advocated, like, don't fucking go see that movie because it's going to be horrible. No. You know what I mean?
There may have been times where I said that.
That's funny.
But I mean, even like a perfect example, I thought Gotham was going to be terrible.
Oh, yeah.
I fucking love the shit out of that show. You know, I might have a preconceived notion about how something's going to be, but I'll go out of my way to watch it. You know?
Because you never know.
Like Thor Ragnarok. Looks amazing. Could be terrible.
It looks amazing.
I think that might be in my notes.
It looks very amazing. I don't know if we've talked about it here yet.
I haven't. It's not in my notes.
Let's talk about it.
Well, I mean, it's the Thor Ragnarok trailer. It looks awesome. It looks funny. Thor gets captured. Hammer breaks. Thor's unworthy.
That's so sad. He's not unworthy.
Well,
his hammer. Somebody broke his hammer.
Well, yeah, but he doesn't have any more, so that's when he's unworthy. Because he doesn't hold on to
it. Does that make him unworthy?
I think
because somebody broke it?
I think that's part of it, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know.
Wow, I never read that. I never even, that didn't even come into my mind at all. I just figured, fuck, he can't pick it up because it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. I just love the, basically the culmination of the trailer where the collector is making two people fight.
Not the collector. His brother.
Yeah. Making the two people fight.
Fuck, I don't remember his name.
He was also in the randomly in the credits of
Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Yes. They said they had extra film or extra scenes from that movie, and Feige was just like, "Nah, throw it in."
But he goes into the arena. Hulk comes out.
Yes,
I know that guy. It's from my work. Then Hulk beats
his
ass.
That was the best part of that fucking movie. Trailer, I mean.
Yes! And like the whole stadium all, goes silent, like, what? It looks good. Like, that looks amazing. Star Wars looks amazing.
Ugh. Then we didn't talk about that either.
You didn't talk about that.
You've been gone for so long.
I've been gone for one episode.
For so long. But how many weeks is that?
It's four.
It's four. That's a long time, my friend.
I'm just saying. I mean, you guys
we
already
did.
Talked
we talked
about it.
It a little
so
bit.
All I need to say is.
But I like to hear what you
Star
have
Wars
to say about it.
Trailer looks amazing. So, obviously, I went to see Guardians of the Galaxy 2
yes.
last night, which was amazing. And we'll come back to that because I got a few other things I want to talk about. But I sit down with my son because we're the only two people in the family that haven't seen it yet. And like a dude from my old job sits down like right next to us. He's all, you seen this yet? Like just totally doesn't bring up the fact that I like just quit. You know, like he's just excited to see a Marvel
right.
movie, you know? And it was funny because he's one of those guys that like speculates like every minor detail of like every single trailer.
Right.
So the Star Wars trailer comes on. He leans over and goes, why do you think it says Star Wars in red this time? I was like, probably because it's aesthetically pleasing. Like, I don't know. That seems like a weird thing to read into. And then I looked at him and I dropped the bomb. I was like, you see the books in the trailer? Those are the first paper-bound books in the Star Wars universe ever. Yeah, which is true. Because George Lucas went out of his way to like make it so there were no like books.
Right.
Like everything's electronic.
That's weird.
So they're so old that there's still books.
So old, but in our future, right?
No, in our past, our very distant past.
Really?
Long, long ago.
Oh, that's
in
true.
In a galaxy far, far
that's
away.
That's true. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I hope they don't pull the Battlestar Galactica where like the last episode of Star Wars is them landing on Earth to repopulate it. Like I really don't want that because that's what, like, I didn't mind it for Battlestar Galactica because it kind of made sense
right.
after like six seasons or whatever. But for Star Wars, that
wow.
would be really frustrating. It's
why is
like,
Bailey always flipping us off?
Because she hates us. Well, I mean, by us, I mean you.
Yeah. I get it.
No.
The whole family does. I understand.
That's not true at all. So there's a TV show that used to be on USA called Sight.
Ugh.
I love this show.
I think it's okay.
My whole family loves this show. And the awesome part.
Talk about shallow.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, I mean, not your family. Yeah, the guys.
Oh, I thought you meant my family. No, this show is not shallow. Screw you. No, so it's like a silly, like, cop drama where the guy's
yeah,
pretending
kinda
to
like
be psychic.
Kind of like Seinfeld, except for cops.
No, not like Seinfeld. There's no.
I love it.
Anyway.
My wife absolutely loves Psych, by the way.
So
she
you
fucking loves it.
You can tell
it.
Her this little piece
I
of information.
I think she knows.
She doesn't know.
I think she does.
There is a Psych movie
yep.
in development, and I'm very excited about that. Yes, I would take more coffee. Thank you, Ashton.
Thank you, Ashton. I would as well, and I much appreciate it. I like your hair, by the way. It looks cool. Thank you.
No coffee for you. No coffee for you.
Can you put some sugar in it for me, please?
How much?
A lot.
Do you just want creamer?
Whatever. Whichever one of those works, that's fine.
I love the weird asides in our show where we talk about coffee.
Your son is so tall.
I know. It's ridiculous.
So who's tall? Are you tall? Are you tall? I mean, you're taller than me, but I don't think you're very tall. Who's
very
tall in your family?
Their granddad.
Their
granddad. Because
he is. They're both. Even Bailey's really tall.
Their granddad's like 6'6" or six,
Jesus
seven,
Christ.
Like
holy cow. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
He's like almost wrestler tall.
Like. Rey Mysterio's only 5'6".
Rey Mysterio doesn't count. Neither does Kalisto. What, for the record, watching him wrestle Braun Strowman was the funnest thing I've ever seen. Anyway, Psych movie in development. I'm super excited.
No, I don't not like Psych. It's just, it was just okay for me. But so there are a lot of funny parts in it, for sure.
So it's one of those shows that, like, there's a few shows where Mel has watched, like, cover to cover. Like, she's seen every single episode in order, whatever. But those shows, sometimes I just sit down, and when she's watching it, I watch it.
Right.
And it's one of those shows where I really, really like it, but it's episodic enough that I don't feel compelled to watch every fucking episode of it. But I'll watch the movie. That sounds really, really fun. Like,
it's kind of like when I used to watch Monk, because that was a fucking good show. But the big overarching story took so long to come to fruition that the middle, you could almost be like, meh, I don't need to watch any of this.
House was a lot like that.
Love House, too. See, that was really good, too.
I love House. It's a great show, but I haven't seen every single episode because it's unnecessary. Like, mostly you're just watching it to see what weird disease somebody has that House figures
That's
out.
That's exactly why I watched every single episode. I love Hugh Laurie. He does an awesome job.
So there's a trailer for a movie called Slight. Have you seen this?
No.
Okay, so we'll watch the trailer and then I'll talk about it.
Okay.
Because I think you'll be interested. Did you guys
Slight like somebody slighted me, or like sleight of hand?
S-L-E-I-G-H-T.
Okay.
It's a trailer for a superhero movie, but it's like this kid finds kind of like a drug that gives him superpowers.
Ooh, like The Patriot.
Yeah, it looks really, really interesting. So
okay.
We'll watch the trailer and then talk about it.
Okay.
I assume you guys talked about the Defenders trailer.
Yes.
Yeah.
We did, yes.
So
we were talking about all of the hallway fights that happen in the Marvel Universe.
Yes, there are a lot of hallway fights. That's something that they've stolen from, like, Korean and Hong Kong action
films. Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a really cool way to, like, block the action so that everything looks more frenetic and compact. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, it's basically an Asian action film.
Nice.
Like, it's pretty cool. Like, there's a movie called Old Boy. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Not the weird one. Not the Jeff Brolin one, but like.
There was one before. Yeah, yeah.
But like, so the hammer fight when he's in the hallway is like a really perfect example of using like the floor and ceiling to like block out an image. And
right.
It's pretty cool. I love it.
Yeah. Tim Husky was sad that there's not going to be a lot of boardroom scenes in this show. Not a lot of lawyer things.
Smartass. You don't know? We don't know what's going to be in the Defenders. We just seen the trailer. How action-packed Iron Fist trailers look.
Not very, now that point. I think about it. I mean,
there was
he
a
used
lot of
his fist
of
maybe like three times.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed at the low level of Iron Fisting that happened.
She coming.
She just putting her shoe on.
We got your back, Jack.
Schnell.
I don't even know what that means. Oh,
so,
all right.
Dark Tower trailer.
Defenders. What'd you think about the Defenders trailer? You didn't say anything.
No, I just said I think it looks good.
Okay.
Like, I'm excited to see it just because it's going to be cool. They did announce, and I don't know if they announced this after Free Comic Book Day, but they are going to – they've gone back and forth now, and they are going to integrate the Marvel Cinematic and the Marvel Television universe.
Yes, so we did talk about that at Free Comic Book Day.
Think session.
So Feige has gone back, I think, three times now and said, yeah, we'll do it. And then he's like, nah, we're not going to do it. And then he's like, okay, yeah, we're going to do it down the line.
Sorry, I said the other thing. That's what that is. You know that, right? He's like, no, God, get off my back. Yes, we'll just integrate the two. Jesus.
I have never understood why you wouldn't do it to begin with. It doesn't make sense to me. You're bringing, and I said it again, I said it last time, but you bring giant fandoms that are already there to different movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You maybe if you think one movie is not going to do a super, super amazing job, put somebody in it, you know? Because it's like Iron Man and fucking Spider-Man. Yeah. Iron Man, I mean, Spider-Man's going to have a big following no matter what, but bringing Iron Man in from the Marvel universe to the Sony Spider-Man feels like they're trying to pump it. Like, it's trying to give it a little bit more juice, and that gets me excited.
So, and what also gets me excited is it opens up the ability for them to say, why don't we put Doctor Strange into a cameo in the Defenders? Because Doctor Strange is one of the Defenders.
Did you
Why don't we put Daredevil in this? You know, they can actually like start to cross-pollinate some of
that
stuff.
It's not like you have to take the whole Defenders crew and shove them all into a movie. It's exactly what you're saying is you can populate one superhero into another superhero's movie. You know? It's not like you don't have to have 30 superheroes all in one spot for it to be kind of successful.
But you can do something awesome where there's a very special episode of Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with Thor in it.
Right. You know, like which that, they alluded to, like you said, in the beginning, because you had Lady Sif and you had other things coming from the movies, and then all of a sudden you never had them again. And then you, when they got big movies coming out, though, that they affect the show. But it's weird. It's always been kind of weird to me that they never have brought, like, even if it was for one episode, you really think Thor doesn't have time to make one fucking episodic TV show?
I mean, sure, they probably have to pay him a lot, and it probably kills their like budget, but have him in like the season finale.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like they did with Samuel Jackson in the end of the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You throw that one cameo in, and it makes the whole season amazing.
Right.
Like,
you're like, oh my God, I remember him from the movies. Yeah. Like, it's just a fun thing.
I mean, I thought that was pretty cool.
Did you see at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy, because I'm sure you stayed for all 18 after credit scenes?
Yes.
The Doctor Strange reference. Not Jeff Goldblum, Sylvester Stallone is getting his little group of Ravagers or whatever the fuck they are. The robot. She did the thumbs up that they give for the fucking to say, okay, we're gonna go get back together. It's exactly the way that Doctor Strange and that's from what I've read, it's a callback to Doctor Strange, which is pretty cool.
Oh, so I didn't equate it just as that. It's just visually that's how the magic in their universe looks to me. So.
And you didn't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. finale. But there's a Doctor Strange fucking callback in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. finale, too.
Nice.
That is fucking amazing.
Every time I think about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I think to myself, I should watch them all. And then I just don't, and I don't know why.
Like,
and
Ghost Rider came back.
I know part of it is time, but part of it is just like I get hooked into it, and then I watch all of it, and I think it's awesome, and then I just don't. It's a weird show that way for me. Dark Tower trailer. Did you guys talk about that?
A little bit. Nothing too crazy, but it was good.
I'm a huge fan of the Dark Tower. Bye. I love you. Have fun at your scrimmage. Go butcher babes. So
I don't know what it is.
So
just visually watching it, I thought it was cool.
So the Dark Tower, like, are you like you're aware that it's like a book series?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like. So Stephen King has created like this amazing universe with the Dark Tower series where I think it's like 7 books that stand alone, but there's hints to the Dark Tower mythology in almost every book that he's ever written.
Do you think he's
beginning.
Like the creator of in-universe things?
I feel like he kind of is, yeah. So, you know, from a Buick 8, The Shining, all of his books have callbacks to like this Dark Tower universe. Even like the book, The Talisman, that he did with Peter Straub, like takes place in that universe with like the dimensional travel and stuff like that. So he's created this giant universe, right? That's so amazing and like really cool. I'm really excited to see like a film adaptation of it. But there's this comic book called Rook, okay? And everything about Rook is almost exactly like the first Dark Tower book, to the point where the creator of Rook is now suing Stephen King because he's like, dude, these two things are the same. Like, their names are even similar. This idea that he's like the last gunslinger is like super similar. All of it. Where you, and it's exactly the era where Rook was getting kind of popular in the comic book shops, because it's a British comic book. So it had like a really long run, but it didn't really come to the United States until like kind of that like 80s era sort of thing.
Right.
So it's just – it's really interesting to see.
It's interesting that he chose now to sue
when
him.
He's going to make a shitload of money off of the movie, right? I thought
fuck that noise.
I thought that was just like a really interesting thing. Like I haven't – I've read both. You know,
right?
And there are really startling similarities to them, but exactly, like it's so long after the fact, like you couldn't have brought this up, like I don't know, 25 years ago
when there wasn't a giant movie being made. Yeah, exactly. Fuck that. With that's Idris fucking Elba. Crazy. I don't know anything. I'm going totally fresh into this movie because I hear it's not a remake of the book, which I've never read anyway, so it's not like I would know about it anyways. But it's not like a remake. It's more of a sequel to the book.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of almost like, fuck, I need to do some kind of research because I don't have any idea what's going on. But I don't know if they made it like that. Like, I don't know if this whole movie will just explain everything.
So The Dark Tower, the first book, The Gunslinger, is a super easy read. And I mean, in general, I would just recommend reading it.
Right.
You know, it's like 300 pages long, but it's a quick read because it's just like the travels of the gunslinger. It's totally worth reading just because it's a great book.
Right.
And it's like kind of a really great jumping off point to like see what maybe might be in the movie.
Nice.
But like the movie looks like kind of a combination of the first two books. Because the first book really genuinely doesn't have a shitload of content in
right.
it, you know, whereas the second one, it gets into like the portals and the interdimensional travel and stuff
nice.
Like that.
Okay.
And like when you talk about it out loud, it sounds crazy because it's like a fantasy world. There's a dark tower. There's this like whole like the gunslingers are like a thing. Like it's not just he's a gunslinger
right.
because he's a –
because he has a gun.
Because he has a gun. It's like a whole like clan of people and they're effectively like the policing agency of this entire world and he's the last one left. And there's like this whole history, you know,
nice.
Where, you know, when they, you know, they shoot with their heart, you know.
Right.
He – you know, he who doesn't shoot with his heart has forgotten the face of his father is like this whole thing. Like they have this history and this lineage and the books like flesh this whole crazy world out, you know, to the point where the movie will never, ever be able to do it justice.
Right.
But it's going to be awesome to see it. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's just like the X-Men. Like there's no way. Like that
there's
first
so much
that first
of it.
X-Men movie came out and you knew it was going to be good, but you knew there's no way they could ever do justice to the X-Men.
Right.
Because there's just this endless amount of X-Men. And it's the same way with Stephen King. Like 11/22/63 even has tie-ins to the Dark Tower universe.
And to it.
Yeah, because of the time travel mm-hmm. stuff. Like,
it's good.
Oh, no, it's awesome. Speaking of time travel stuff.
Terminator 6.
No.
It's coming.
I know.
It's coming, and Arnold's going to be in it, and I'm going to go fucking watch it.
No, let me do this one, then you tell me about Terminator 6.
Oh, that's pretty much it.
Have fun.
I will.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
see,
yeah. There
right
it
now,
is. There
right
it
now,
is.
I don't mind it, because I'm not trying to write something down.
Just take it.
For the record, my wife is humping my head.
No, I'm humping your shoulder.
Oh, that's true.
Same day.
No, that's all right. That's all right.
He's all, no, please do.
Huh. I don't know that was quite what I was going for. But.
Yeah, we know.
Bye.
So Bruce Campbell did a Reddit Ask Me Anything.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and somebody asked the most important question you can ask Bruce Campbell. Is Evil Dead 2 a remake or a sequel? And he gave this incredibly lengthy explanation to say it's a requel where up to the point where he's being pulled through the trees back to the cabin, it's a remake of the original movie. So it's like a 45-minute recap of a 90-minute film. And then everything that happens after that point is then a sequel to the first movie. And I was like, oh, that makes way more sense. Like, I've been trying to put that shit together in my brain since I was like 13 years old.
Yeah, so. He said something about how there, because I guess there was some sort of fucking confusion as to why Ash would go back to the cabin exactly. with other people. And he's like, no, 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 no. It's the same people. We just had to hire different actors to do it.
But that's confusing to people. Like, you could see how that would be weird.
I could see that, but I didn't ever put that together. I was just like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, I didn't think he ever left and came back.
See, in my brain, that's exactly what he did.
Oh, weird.
He left and came back, and then a bunch of the same shit happened, but, like, kind of different. And I was like, why did he go back? Why wouldn't you just run away from that shit? Like, that's retarded. You're retarded. Like... You dumb, Bruce Campbell.
Side note, I started watching, I'm probably 7 or 8 episodes in to Ash vs. the Evil Dead, the first season.
Yeah.
And it is fucking hilarious and amazing.
I really want to see that.
They're 30 minutes, so they're fucking, they go by really quick.
Yeah. It looks super funny.
You get to see a little bit of Lucy Lawless naked. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but she looked pretty in there. So
She was pretty hot in Spartacus. Yeah. So.
She's like evil, I think, right now, which is kind of weird.
She will take her clothes off for stars. Like, just, oh, I'll be on stars.
Yeah,
sure.
Whatever.
Titties.
Yeah.
Runaways, Marvel comic book about, I think this is
people who run away?
No, I think it's the kids who find out their parents are supervillains.
Oh, that sounds crazy.
Let me double check this really quick.
Oh, Marika's going to yell at us.
No, she's not, because you're going to cut this part out. No, not the Joan Jett band. Oh, yeah, Joan Jett was in a band called The Runaways. No, I'm just making sure I'm talking about the same thing. Yes. Okay, yeah, that is the right book.
Cool.
So The Runaways is this comic about these kids that discover their parents are part of something called The Pride, which is a supervillain organization. And so they run away from home to fight their parents. Okay? So... they are adapting it as a TV show that is going to be a Hulu exclusive. So that should be pretty cool. The Hulu exclusive shows have been like really hard edged, like on the same level as Netflix. Like Shut Eye is super, super intense. A Handmaid's Tale is super intense. Like a lot of those Netflix and Hulu shows, they're just like, we have zero restriction. It's on the internet.
Right.
We can literally do whatever we want, and they do, and it's awesome. So I'm excited to see what they do with Runaways because it has a lot of potential to be a really, really good show.
Nice.
It's like, what a cool concept. Like, these kids grow up. They know they have superpowers. They grow up kind of like in this little compound.
Right.
And then they discover that their parents are evil. Like, you know, they've been taught that they, you know, you're working towards a common goal, a common purpose, and that common purpose is overthrow the earth. You know? So it's just it's a cool idea.
Yeah, at least their parents didn't lie to them.
Runaways has like, no, their parents have been lying to them their whole lives.
No,
that's the problem.
They didn't lie to them. They just didn't tell them the whole story. Okay. Come on.
So Runaways has kind of like a cool story as a comic book where it went like 12, 14 issues, something like that, and they got canceled because it wasn't getting very good single sales, right? But in trade, people were – it did like this slow buildup where, you know, there were a few sales and then people recommended and people recommended
right.
and people recommended to the point where it sold so many trades of the first like 2 volumes that they actually started back up single issues
that's
of
cool.
it. I think like – I want to say like 2 years later.
I can get on board
like
with that.
I mean, so it's a good enough story and comic book that just word of mouth, like, made it come back, like, from the dead. So.
Timeless. They did that with Timeless just recently.
Yeah.
They canceled the fucking 18 million shows, and then I guess there was a big enough uproar for that show that NBC was like, oh, all right, we'll bring it back.
But not Constantine. Fuck you, CW. I'm not bitter. Kiss my ass.
Wow. So much bitterness.
What do you have?
I
know you only have a few things.
Just a few. No, it's all right. Terminator 6, Arnold Schwarzenegger confirmed that they're making it. It's happening, and he's going to star in it.
Terminator 6.
There you go. His mate is in it? Is that kind of a reference to that?
Made.
It made a lot. I guess it made a lot of money, just not. It made a lot of money overall. But I guess the acclaim, yeah. But the reviews, I guess, were not that great, and that's why the company was like, "Nah, I don't know if we want to make another one." Even though it made a lot of money, which was weird to me, why you wouldn't just go ahead and make another one? But I'm excited for it. I know there's not a lot of people who there's not a lot of people who like that Terminator and Alien, and these things are kind of just kind of dragging on at this point.
Yeah.
Even though they make money, even though people go see them, but. I'm excited for it. I don't care what anybody says.
Like, the first Terminator movie came out, what, in like 89 or something like that?
Something. Because Terminator look, 2, I was young when Terminator 2 came out. Because yeah. I don't remember Terminator 1. I first started watching, the first thing I watched was Terminator 2.
So I was in fourth or fifth grade when Terminator came out. Because it was like one of those things that you talked about in the schoolyard where, oh, did you see the part where his eyeball or whatever? You know, like there was always the rumor, the one kid right. had seen the movie and like blew something like completely out of proportion. Like the dude that gets his kneecaps blown off in Die right. Hard, I remember it was like a huge deal, you know? Because you can, but you see his kneecap fly off. No, you don't. Like, so Magic Wizard Box says Terminator came out in 1984.
Wow.
So okay. It's 2017, so it's like 30-some years later.
I would have been negative 3 years old.
But it's like, it's 33 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And they're,
but Arnold was a nobody, I think, when that movie came out.
They're just getting to Terminator 6. Come on, Fast and the Furious is already on like its sixth movie. Like, speed it up,
it's
Terminator.
On, it's on Fast 9, by the way.
Is it really?
Yeah. Oh my God. The Fate of the Furious was number 8.
Stop making Fast and the Furious
No
movies.
Way. Why? Again.
If people are going
again,
to see
it's
it.
It's another movie that fucking dominates the box office for months.
Right.
It makes so much. There's so many people out there that still go out and watch those movies.
Because it's fun.
Why wouldn't you keep making them? It doesn't make any sense. Sense to, it makes no sense to stop.
For me, I just don't want to keep track of the fact that there's 9 of them.
When you've got the biggest stars in Hollywood,
that's like
coming to
movie level sequel.
But the problem is, slasher movies don't make that much money.
they make comparatively a lot of money
because they
made them for like 25
right,
bucks
right.
and then made like $10 million off of them.
But I mean, when you've got Jason Statham and The Rock and Kurt Russell and all these people wanting to be in your franchise, you keep making those movies.
Oh yeah.
I watched 3 finales the other night. The Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. finale with Ghost Rider was fucking amazing. I absolutely loved it. I didn't think he was coming back when he left, even though they kind of hinted at it. But he walked through a fucking portal that Ada, the machine, makes. She's trying to make herself human is kind of the premise of the back half of the season, which has actually turned out to be really, really good. It for me, it was almost better than the Ghost Rider first part. You know, I fanboyed because Ghost Rider was in it. But
right.
the second half was two different worlds. So the real world that everybody's in – and then a fake world that that Ada, the artificial intelligence, has created and trapped 4 people in.
Okay.
In that world, Hydra never got overthrown and rules the world at that point. And so it's Daisy and Fitzsimmons going into the fake world to try and convince these people that they're in a fake world and they need to come back before crazy shit happens.
It's kind of like The Matrix.
Yeah.
Almost.
And Ada, the artificial intelligence, has fixed one thing in each one of their lives to make it more compelling, to make it so that you don't just go, this is fake. You know what I mean? So she gave one guy his daughter back because she had died at some point, and she gave one guy his father back because he had died. And there's a lot of crazy turmoil because now they think they've lived a full life in the fake world, and so when they come out, it's like, I don't know what to believe. I have these feelings for Hydra and the evil side of the universe, but I feel this other life too, which is really compelling story wise for me. There was some action in the back half. There's always action in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it was more of a story driven plot, I think, on the back half until the final episode with Ghost Rider.
Nice.
He comes back and they fight and blah blah blah. I'm not going to spoil it, but at the very end, because they're still fighting over the Darkhold.
You're right.
At the very end, what I wanted to get to earlier was when he – so when he goes away to take the Darkhold to some sort of safe place, some sort of other realm, some sort of one of the nine realms or something they talk about, he fucking – he's like, I learned a thing or two when I was gone, and he takes his chain off and he fucking whips it around – just like when in Doctor Strange, when they do the little thing for the portal,
yeah,
and it sparks, and it looks exactly like the portal that they do in Doctor Strange, nice. Which was fucking awesome. It was a really cool callback to that movie, and like you said, kind of the overall magic in the universe,
yeah.
But it talking about the other realms and then the magic and shit, it to me it was like they were trying to say, like, you know, we know that you know that this exists in a bigger universe. It's not just this show, which was really cool to me.
That's awesome. I mean, I want to catch up on it. It's like I said, it's one of those weird shows where when I watch it, I love it, and then I just stop watching it for some reason.
Because you're a bitch.
No, it's at work.
I watched the Blacklist finale. That was really good too. You don't watch that at all, huh?
That's sounds really cool. Like, I just haven't watched any of it.
So you find out that the main guy is actually the father of the cop whose life he interjected himself into a long time ago.
Right.
And his so in this season, he tried to kill. So it's confusing. So the cop and then the two bad guys that are kind of good guys. But the main guy is her father, and the girl is – she promised her – the cop's mother that she would take care of her and protect her no matter what. And so the mother's died a long time ago, and so the main bad female is the main bad male's cleaner. Like, he'll go in and he'll kill people, and she'll come in and clean up the mess like it never happened. And this whole season was about her – coming back at him because he tried to kill her for something that she did. And so she's unraveling his whole kind of empire in this whole season, which was really cool. And that came to a head, and it was more sad and it was good because I grew it after fucking, you know, I think it's five or six seasons at this point, you grow attached to this person who you've known through this whole series. And to watch them kind of battle each other and watch how it ended was kind of sad to me.
Yeah.
But it's cool that that's a show that they renewed. So there's going to be another season, which is really cool. So it left on a cliffhanger too.
Yes.
But I enjoy it. I know it's hard and it's confusing because I'm the type that I fucking will just binge something until I'm caught up. But I definitely think you should go watch Blacklist. Designated Survivor was also finale the other day, and that's another fucking really good show that, nice. I think you people should go watch. That's
what do you mean, you people?
No, people, you people, the people that are listening.
What's that supposed to mean?
You Mexicans. Actually, I don't think a lot of Mexicans would enjoy it. I don't know. Who knows?
I'm sure lots of Mexicans like that show.
They're like, that's all white people problems. What's going on? Just kidding.
Still a better president than Trump.
That's true. No, what I like about that show is the parallels. It's kind of what I liked about the last season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Half of the show is them trying to figure out what's going on in the White House, and you see Kiefer Sutherland going through rebuilding a Congress and picking a vice president and all that shit. And then the other half of the show deals with the FBI and the traitors and you know, the people who attacked Congress. Right. So it's a cool, almost like two different 30-minute shows within one show.
Nice.
And that's kind of what's cool about it to me. But it also ended on a cliffhanger, and they're going to renew it next season as well.
One of my favorite shows was this show called The Wire, and it was very much like that, where it was about a drug, like a drug task force within the police department, and also about like the high level drug dealers and also about the street level drug dealers. And so like every episode dealt with those parts of the story.
Right.
And like the drug task force even was separated to like the beat cops and the detectives and like the upper echelons of the police.
Right.
You got to see snippets of like each aspect of like this war on drugs kind of thing. It's
right.
super fascinating.
Nice.
It's genuinely one of the best TV shows ever made. Like if you haven't watched that, you need
I have
to watch
not
that.
Watched that.
The
that
Wire
one.
Is really, really good.
I have not watched that. I'm catching up on Sliders and Ash versus Evil Dead right now.
Nice. Star Trek Discovery.
Oh,
Star Trek show.
Yeah.
It's going to be on CBS All Access.
Which and the first weird. Trailer came out not yeah, too long ago.
Pretty good. And then on the same note, Seth MacFarlane's spoof of Star Trek, The Orville, looks amazing.
I didn't see that.
So the premise is it effectively is the Star Trek universe.
Right.
But it's not really the Star Trek universe. Like it's a spoof kind of how Galaxy Quest was.
Right.
Right? So the premise is they need somebody to captain an exploratory ship, but they don't have enough captains. So they're just like giving it to him. They're like, you get to be the captain of a ship because you're the last captain we have left. And so he gets on his ship and like, you know, there's all sorts of hilarity or whatever. And he finds out that his first mate is his ex-wife. So there's like this
okay.
tension there and like everything's weird. It looks really fucking funny.
Nice.
I mean, it's Seth MacFarlane.
Right.
In like a Star Trek tropes kind of show. So.
Is he starring in it or is
yeah,
he just creating it?
He's
oh, okay.
The captain of
nice.
The ship. Yeah. It looks really funny. So.
Fuck Seth MacFarlane.
Why?
I'm just kidding. I, okay. I like Seth MacFarlane.
You want to take a quick break?
And we can eat some food before we
sure.
record this interview? Some break. Oh, shit. That's in 10 minutes, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
You can bring the food down here.
Okay, cool.
But
yeah, somebody take us out. Oh, it's only me and you.
Oh, I shit my pants.
Hey, this is Clyde.
And this is Sucralose Mammaries.
How many times do we have to tell you? Sugar tits, blondie.
Sorry, you guys are the dumb ones on this show.
That's my girl. We're from the Old Still Radio Show. And we just wanted y'all to know we love this fucking podcast. That's right, it's time for more Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Are you ready, sucker?
Yeah.
Okay, we're recording.
Yeah, we're back.
Oh, wow, that one was kind of angry sounding.
No, I was just trying to channel John's emotion.
Mm.
Since he's not here.
Bastard.
That's me crying.
Me too.
So I only have like three more things, but I want to talk about them really.
Okay, so we just got done with the
interview. The people from Fanbase Press.
Oh, yeah, because we have another interview in 15 minutes anyways.
Oh, okay.
With Nick Filardi, I hope is how you say his last name.
We'll ask him. He's been a colorist on, like, everything. Like, I mean, I was looking at his Comic Vine thing. He's done a ton of work. It's really cool. So
he was recommended to us by, wow. Totally blanked his name. The guy who I believe does translations in the back of a comic book.
Oh, Zach Davison?
I believe so. I'm looking right now because I cannot remember, so I'm trying to talk really slow.
He doesn't do translations in the back of a comic book. He does the back matter for
That's
Wayward,
what I talk about.
And then he translates manga.
Okay, yeah. Zach Davison. Yeah. So a friend of his, he reached out to a few podcast people he knew to see if anybody would be wanting or willing to interview Nick. So
nice. That's awesome. I think we're gonna talk to him quite a bit about Heartthrob, which is his newest.
Which I know nothing about.
It sounds like it's about a lady that gets a heart transplant from a criminal and turns into a criminal.
Oh, that would be cool.
I like stories like that.
That's kind of like that movie where the dude gets killed and then he gets into the electricity or some shit. It's kind of crazy. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, that movie's retarded. I love that movie so much. So, real quick. No renewal for Powerless.
Yay!
I liked
I'm
the
just
show.
Kidding. I have no idea.
It was pretty funny. I kind of saw it coming, though. Like, I didn't see anybody talking about it, hear anybody talking about it.
except for us.
Except for me. Like, I'm a little bummed that it's going away, but, I mean, it is what it is. That's TV for you.
Well, I think they went away from what everybody was excited for. And,
yeah.
And it turned into something that was different from what everybody was all hyped up to watch.
Yeah. I mean, there were mistakes were made for sure. You know,
mistakes were definitely made.
As the show progressed through its season, it got progressively funnier, and that's what bums me out. Like, I feel like it could have hit its stride in the second season, but I feel like it spun its wheels a little bit too much in that first season for them to. They can't with good conscience give it a second season with just kind of how crappy the first like half of the first season was.
Right.
But it was funny. I hope all of the people that are in the show go on to make other amazing shows.
So. Well, I mean, it has some pretty big stars in it, so I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
I just saw that, speaking of cancellations, Frequency got canceled as well. And I just saw that that the network is making like an epilogue of, or they made it. I'd have to look and see because I didn't read the whole article yet. An epilogue because I guess the first season ended on a cliffhanger. And so they just kind of closed it up.
Yeah. Man, you know what I wish they would have done that with is Jericho.
The Walls of Jericho?
No, it was a show about this little town called Jericho that's like in the sweet spot.
The Bibular Jericho?
No. Like in Iowa or something. Oh. Like, but it's in like that sweet spot where if like nuclear bombs drop, it doesn't take like fallout damage or like get blown up. And so they survive. And then they start getting attacked by this other country and all this other stuff happens. But the end, they like get a plane to work and they fly because they're trying to find other survivors because they're about to get attacked by like an army. And they fly into the United States of Texas airspace and they have like F-16s and all this other stuff. And then the writer's strike happens. So the show is just over forever. It's like, give me 30 minutes just to tell me what happens. That's all
I
want.
They die.
Does everybody die? Does Texas save them? Fuck you. Fuck you, Jericho.
I like Jericho,
the TV show. You just made the list. So Sci-Fi has a movie coming out called Blood Drive that looks amazing. It's about a post-apocalyptic world where they have figured out how to make cars work on blood, so they kill people to fuel their cars.
Is that going to be an ongoing thing in pop culture that like everything takes place after everything has just been annihilated?
That's how it's always been. You were just talking about Terminator 6. Like, that's what happens in Terminator.
In the new Terminator, that never happened. See, you didn't watch, so you don't know.
That's because it's Genesis, I can't handle it. It's a stupid spelling.
Skynet didn't attack everybody.
Skynet attacks everybody.
No,
that's the point.
They fixed it.
No, they didn't.
Yes, they did.
No, they didn't.
You didn't watch it.
I know.
Okay.
Oh man, but Blood Drive looks awesome. I'll probably have to wait till
that
comes
looks
out
terrible.
On
I'm not going
to
tell you.
No,
I'm not going to say anything. That sounds terrible.
It looks super stupid. Like it's like the same vein as like a Sharknado movie where it looks so bad that it's funny. So I'm excited to see Blood Drive. Oh, I have kids coming to hug me.
Because they have to. They're obligated.
I know.
Every few hours, Mel makes them come hug you.
Yeah. No, Mom's not here. She just left us notes to do it.
I don't know. I don't know if we should talk about Guardians of the Galaxy because we have 9 minutes and it's not going to be a 9-minute conversation.
Why not?
All right. I love Guardians of the Galaxy.
I can sum up my thoughts about Guardians of the Galaxy. It's amazing. Like, the thing that's good about Guardians of the Galaxy is that it's all about character development.
Right.
It's not an incredibly action-packed movie like the first one was. It's not even like as relentlessly funny as the first one was. But the impact of the end of the movie because of the character development is unreal. Like, I talked about it in the interview before, like bawling my eyes out at the end of this movie. Like, I mean, not like Trolls where it just like kind of caught me off guard, but like
Trolls, like the
movie,
the scary movie.
No. Trolls like with Justin Timberlake.
Oh, okay.
So we talked about that like 2 episodes ago, how that stupid movie got me with its, I see your true.
I know. And then you cried like a little bitch.
But so the whole like story arc about Star-Lord's dad is so well done, like where he's trying to find his dad. He finds out that it's Ego, like, and just the progression of like how all that turns out, and I kind of don't want to spoil it because it's barely like going to be 3-4 weeks after the movie came out by the time this comes out. No, I'm serious. Like, right. There's going to be people that haven't seen it yet. But just the end is so well done and so powerful and ties the whole movie together in such a good way that it's hard to find fault in the movie.
Right.
I mean, it's just there's a lot of people that like kind of poo-poo on like the superhero Marvel cinematic universe and just are like, oh, they're just
why it's the, better.
Well, I mean, no, they're just like, it's just popcorn films. It's just, you know, fun for fun's sake, whatever. This movie is not that. Like, it really has something good to say about family and created family, which for me is very important. You know, I don't have the best relationship with my mom. Like, my dad was, you know, because my parents were divorced, I didn't get to see my dad a lot when I was really young. And so the people, I don't have any siblings except for a brother that's the same age as my second youngest child, you know? So the family that I have is created family.
Right.
Like, my best friends are my kids' uncles because I don't have any siblings.
Right.
You know, I have a father figure and a dad, you know, and I have like kind of a lady that stands in as my mom because I don't really have a relationship with my mom. So my family is like the Guardians of the Galaxy in that it's created family. And I think that's it's a really important message because there's so many crazy, broken, mixed, blended family homes out there that, you know, you kind of have to take it as that.
Right.
I find my family in other people, you know. I mean, I have my own family, but, you know, my wife and my four kids, and they're super, super important. But that extended.
So what you're saying is if you stole one of them.
I mean, I would use Hannah to get into the small spaces because she'd be good at feeding. You know, I mean, it's just that idea that like creating family is just as important as your birth family is a really good message. I think
the end of the movie was definitely pretty sad.
It's a tearjerker.
It was heart wrenching. Watching fucking Mary Poppins float down in the umbrella was amazing. That was so funny.
Is he pretty cool? Yeah, he's pretty cool.
He's a badass. I'm Mary Poppins,
y'all. I'm Mary Poppins, y'all.
Oh, it's the fucking
best. I literally just saw a meme of Michael Rooker, obviously at like Disney World,
right,
standing next to a Mary Poppins actress. And it says Mary Poppins standing next to some lady cosplaying as Mary Poppins. I thought the movie's great.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, the funny bits are super, super funny. The action-y bits are awesome. The serious aspect of it, like the underlying message, is wonderful. Like, it's just a great movie all around.
I went to see it at the drive-thru the second day it came out, or the drive-in. The drive-in? The drive-in.
Yeah, not you don't drive-thru. That's McDonald's.
And we saw, Alicia saw Beauty and the Beast. I passed right the fuck out. I was so, it's so weird because I know I'm a late owl and I know I can stay up late, but it just did not hold any fucking bit of my interest and I just straight passed out. I think I've only done that with like 3 or 4 movies in my whole life and I fucking couldn't stand it.
there's this movie from the 90s called Dark City. And it has this monologue at the very beginning that Kiefer Sutherland does.
Right.
First, there were the Watchers. Gabe's asleep. Every fucking time I've turned on that movie, I have fallen asleep in the first 30 seconds of that movie at least 15
Speaking
times.
Speaking of the Watchers.
Oh.
Fucking Stan Lee.
So help me understand something. That's his last cameo, correct? Or no?
I don't think so.
Okay, so I was under the impression that that might be his last cameo, and that was even more depressing than like the end of Guardians of the Galaxy. Him sitting with the Watchers like, don't leave, guys. I have more stories to tell. It's like such a bittersweet thing because, you know, like, I'm going to say something that nobody wants to hear. Stan Lee is at
die?
The end of his life. Like, he's almost 100 fucking years old,
yeah.
Man. I mean, he's – I mean, we met him at Denver Comic Con, and he's really, really old, you know? I mean, he only has so much time left, and
that sucks.
But to see that scene where he's telling the Watchers, I have so much more to tell you guys. I'm just like, I mean, it's been Stan Lee.
Well, the theory is that he's a watcher. He is the I don't remember the guy's name. And yes, Marie, I'm sorry, I forgot. Uatu.
Yeah.
And the he's worst like
watcher
the
ever.
Is that what it is? Really? I don't know. I don't know anything about the watchers. All I know is that he watches over Earth.
Right. And he's not supposed to interfere.
Right.
He's just supposed to record. You know why you know who Uatu is in the Marvel Universe? Because he's constantly fucking interfering with stuff and like constantly getting taken in front of the Watcher High Council and being told, stop it! Like, you can't affect the universe, you dumbass. Uatu is the worst Watcher. I will go out on a limb and say that.
What the fuck is the point of a watcher if you can't do anything? What's the point of a bunch of creatures who just watch things?
They record the history of the universe. That's their job. They're observers. They're just meant to record the history. And Uatu can't do that. Like, he's hung out with too many – like, he's hung out with Tony Stark way too much. And he's like, ah, fuck it. I do what I want.
But it's beautiful that they've kind of weaved him into everything and that makes sense if that's really what ends up happening. You know? And they'll probably never say, or at the very end of his fucking last, you know, thing, he'll interfere somehow and they'll win the day or something, you know? Something crazy will happen or it'll just never be explained. But I enjoy the interweaving of him into everything that is Marvel at this point.
Right. Oh, man. So, we have another interview coming up?
Yes.
Probably, like, here in a couple minutes, yeah?
Yes. I'm just waiting for him to tell me what his Skype ID is.
Nice. I feel like the consensus right now in the world is that the Marvel Cinematic Universe is good.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
fucking A.
I don't think I've seen anything that I've been just, like, genuinely disappointed in from Marvel. I don't know. It's weird. Well, I'm going to take us out from a break.
Oh, all right. From a break or into a break?
Into a break while we wait for this interview to happen. And I'm going to go.
Oh, that's gross.
That's what I'm going
to
do.
I'm going to go make another coffee because I think you made more coffee.
Yeah, there's more coffee.
So I'm fucking, I need to wake up.
And I'm going to.
Why do you keep saying that and doing that? Ba-doo, ba-doo, ba-doo.
Here's a few reasons why you should be listening to the Unwritable Rant podcast with host Juliet Miranda. She can tell a great story.
If you can't play dead, play drunk. And it works, I swear.
She interviews celebrities that have great stories.
If we have a cousin that's kind of strange, we don't put him away or tuck him away. We set him on an old dryer out in the front yard with alcohol and let him wave at people.
right, and then you tell your friends about it.
And she's tolerant and loves kids.
So these kids go running up after the ball, and I stand up and I yell, kids die in the street all the time.
So head on over to theunwritablerant.com and listen to the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. On the line, we have Nick Filardi. Nick has been the colorist on characters like that run the full gamut, everything from Batman and Superman to Deadpool and Powers, Elephant Men, The Flash, like you name it, Nick's probably worked on at least the character, if not like the issue. So, Nick, welcome to the show. How are you today, man?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So we like to start out every interview with what's the origin story of X? And what I want to know from you is what's the origin story of you becoming a colorist?
Oh, man. So I started – when I started – okay, this is going to – is this a PG-13 show or is this an R-rated show?
This is like a hard R show.
Hard R?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't tell you.
I'll take my TVs out.
Let's just say that one of the reoccurring special guest hosts gets called the butt plug enthusiast. Like, let's just start with that. so you can say pretty much whatever.
All right. I just wanted to feel you guys out. I'm glad I know where you stand now. So I went to a show. I went to Savannah College of Art and Design. Which I have mixed feelings about, like recommending in the future because it's just so goddamn expensive. But I went to SCAD and I fell in with like a really like ambitious group of people: Christian Donaldson, Sean Murphy, Matt Wilson, Chad Thomas. And we started going to cons like way earlier than we probably should have. Like I was like you know, 19, 20 years old and trying to hang out with Phil Hester. And I was like, hey, fellow, you know, adult, like, we're going to talk comics. And he's just like, all right, kid, get out of here. I was like conning my way into parties and stuff, places I should not have been, with a portfolio that was fucking terrible. And so I started doing this, and I was buying around for the table, and there was Scott Ollie, who edits Hellboy, was there at the bar, just coincidentally next to me, posted up, and he was hammered, like, beyond, like, what a normal human being should. And he was like, what do you do? And I was like, well, I'm kind of a colorist, kind of, you know, like, I didn't really have anything in print. And he was like, that's awesome, I'm a buy around for you in the table. And I was like, okay, like, that's fine. So he bought around. He was like, come to the show, you know, show me your stuff. So I was like, okay. So I show up at the show the next day, and he's like, I don't remember you at all.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, he was like, I guess let me see your stuff. So I showed him my stuff, and he paid me a very high compliment. He looked at it and he goes, well, this is the first Hellboy page that doesn't make me want to puke. So I guess he had been like a Hellboy, like people showing him Hellboy stuff was like so common, and like the art was so bad as far as colors go, that he was like, wow, this stuff is actually like decent. So he gave me, I think it's a Kara something that this was like forever ago. This was 2004. And I apologize because I don't remember the woman's name who was running the submissions for color for Dark Horse at the time. But he gave me her email address. I started submitting. Before I submitted, because I had never submitted anything to anyone before, I was like totally in the weeds. There was a color studio, Xylenol Studios, run by Lee Lowridge in Savannah, Georgia, where I was. And I brought my portfolio in just to be like, hey, am I making any like glaring errors? You know, am I doing anything really, really wrong before I submit this thing? And he was like, no, you're good. You know, put my name on it. The portfolio looks good. And I worked for Dark Horse maybe 7 years later. Like it did not happen overnight for Dark Horse. But I did get a call from Lee in like a month and a half. And he was like, hey, do you want to start working at the studio? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. So nice. I started working at the studio from like 2003-ish to like 2005-ish, somewhere in there. And then after that, kind of struck out on my own and grinded it out.
So there's like this infamous scene in one of Kevin Smith's movies, which of course I'm completely drawing a blank on. But what's that?
And talk about that tracer.
Yeah, the tracer. Okay, so with the tracer mentality for inkers, which, you know, as a fan of comic books, I know is 100% not true. Like, how often do you get accused of just being somebody that colors in a coloring book? And
look,
and how do you approach that? Right?
It's you. It's me. You're the first one. This interview is off the rails. I am out of here. No, I get like all kinds of, you know, part of the reason why I'm reaching out and doing more podcasts and trying to be more visible on Twitter is because I feel like people don't necessarily know what the colorist does. Like, I feel like the average comic reader opens up a comic. If it's in color, they're like excited about that, but they don't really care about like what the color is. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, They're just happy to read their Deadpool issue and move on. And they don't realize like the amount of impact that the colorist has on the page and how you're reading it and, you know, those kinds of things. So I get like it really runs the gamut. Sometimes at shows, people would be like, oh, I love your colors. You know, like I try to pick up anything you do because I know it's going to be like this beautiful piece. And then sometimes I get people like that come up to the table and go, like, you did this? And I was like, yeah. And like, you did this? And I'm like, yeah, you did this. And they like point out every issue. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, they look at it because it's, you know, it's Powers and Deadpool and Heartthrob and like, you know, like my Oni books. I worked with Joel Jones on Helheim, you know, like it's like the art runs the gamut. Right. And they'll be like trying to piece it together. And they'll be like, so are you an inker? And I'll be like, no, I'm a colorist. It says it in big, bold letters behind me, you know, like look up. I mean, you know, it's a Comic-Con, so there's like, you know, stuff everywhere vying for your attention constantly. But yeah, so people will be like, oh, how do you, they'll be like trying to like piece it together and they'll be like, so you just color it? And I'm like, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. It really runs the gamut. Some people are very receptive and knowledgeable and some people aren't. And that's fine. You know, like people read comics for a lot of different reasons and get enjoyment in a lot of different ways. Like, I don't know what a grip does on set, but I'm sure they're there.
Stuff.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense.
No, I'm just saying, like, I just assume they grip.
True? No. Yeah.
I have no idea.
I took that as 100% fact.
No, I just assume they hold shit. Like, that's –
Yeah.
They're called a grip.
You know, they're in the credits. They're probably critical. You know, like, I don't know. Like, but if I was, like, getting more into film, I'd probably figure out what a grip does.
Right.
And people who wanted, you know – get into comics beyond what like their favorite writer does and beyond what their favorite character is doing. Like I would like to be available to, you know, dispel some rumors and not be accused of being a fucking tracer.
So I kind of try to go out of my way to not necessarily like keep track of specific colorists. Like I don't really go out and buy that, but I do try to notice it because I realized at some point reading Hellboy and Baltimore and a couple of other things that Dave Stewart colored,
yeah,
that his colorization of them created like this shared universe across several different art styles and several different comic books. And,
yeah,
and you know, that aspect of how things look visually by linking the colors together is really, really important to the comic books. I mean, and there's even, I mean, there's books that are largely, Raphael Albuquerque's new book. I mean, a huge portion of the book is based on the color palettes, you know, the different aspects of time travel and stuff like
this
color palette's the past, this color palette's the present, this color palette's the meld, like that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah,
it's a very important aspect, obviously, of colored comic books, not a very important aspect of, you know, as you mentioned, like Sean Murphy's, you know, working
punk
with him.
Jesus, yeah, punk rock Jesus,
colorization's not important at all. But, you know, it's such a huge and fundamental part of like color, colored comic books. Like, how do you approach your process? Like, do you, you know, is it something that you work really closely with the artist, or are you kind of, you know, spitballing ideas with them? Like, how does that whole process work?
It really, really depends on the book and the time frame and, you know, like a lot of different things. Like, so I'm doing a run on Deadpool right now. I'm doing 287 to 291, and it's Scott Kobolish, who I've worked with before. We did the Deadpool 2099 stuff, and when we did that, I just got a note from Gary Dugan in the beginning that was just like, hey, it's 2099, so make it all like neon and bright and, you know, like that kind of thing. And I was like, yeah, all right, done and done. You know, I love the 2099 stuff, so like he didn't even have to leave me a note. But
right.
For this run, he was like, we're going for a more darker feel rather than LOL chimichangas. So make the coloring reflect that. And I was like, yeah, okay. So sometimes it's just a note for like what we want to hit. And sometimes it's more than that. I'm working on a book right now called The Realm with Jeremy Hahn and Seth Peck. And it is more, not necessarily micromanaged, but like it, like the color reflects the world in a way that we're trying to create something unique. And when you're trying to do something like very unique, there's a lot of conversation about like how to pull that off. If you just want to do like, I'm not knocking Deadpool here, but what I'm saying is if you just want to do like a Deadpool book and you want to do a superhero book, there's a certain like, there are steps and process to that that are like kind of well-tread territory. And you also, you got to ride the line between like, you know, if I note this dude to death, I impact like his ability to work, you know? So like I've been on projects where like like all my color stuff got like super micromanaged and I was just miserable. And then it came out in the work. Like the colors are drab. I just like, you know, it hits a point where I'm just like, you know, if you micromanage me to death, I'm going to work on a page.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like I'm going to work on a page and I'm going to be like, well, it's got color on it. I'm done. You know, like, cause I'm going to be like, well, we're going to correct the shit out of this whole book anyway. So who the fuck cares?
Right.
But like, you know, if you let me fly, if you're the wind beneath my wings, like we're going to do some cool shit. So, I mean, to circle back around, it really, really varies. And it really depends on the project and the goals. And like, sometimes the goals are like really esoteric, like on Heartthrob, like when we were talking about the book and the look of the book that we wanted, like the look that we wanted, we're like, well, it's set in the 70s. So, you know, do that. But it's going to feel like the volatility of a Fleetwood Mac album, Rumors at the time. So, you know, just think about that while you're coloring. And I'm like, holy fuck. Like you're sending me into some kind of like weird, like esoteric.
I need to drop acid before I do this? Right, like, yeah, I'm like, kind of confused.
I'm like looking within myself and I'm like, I don't know. I guess red. I don't know.
Discover the colors, man. Let the colors come to you. Yeah.
So it's really like I said, it's all over the fucking place.
So when you were going to school,
yeah.
Was your goal, you know, was your end goal to become a colorist or did you have something else in mind?
No, I don't know. How old you guys are, but here's
I'm real old.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm almost 40. So.
The harsh reality of going to college is that you come out of college with crippling student loan debt. especially
I didn't
when
even
you
finish college and I have that. So yeah.
Yeah. You're in the same boat. So especially when you like decide to go to private art school, like so I really wish nobody's at fault or anything. Everybody, I knew what I was getting into, but as an 18-year-old, I had no idea, like, you know, I was looking at colleges and I was like, you know, $10,000 or $25,000 a year. Like that doesn't make, I can't like conceive of any amount of money beyond $5,000. We might as well have been talking like Rick and Morty Schmeckles, you know, like, I was like, is that a lot? Is that a little? I don't know. Like, whatever. I'll just go to college. So when I got out, I was making these like weird little comics and they weren't like very marketable, and Comic Cons and the temperature in comics were a lot different in 2004 than they are now. Like nowadays you have, you know, creators like Babs Tarr doing like Motocross, and like it's just like this weird Motocross, like it's a crazy book that like I feel like if she came out with it in 2004, like
it wouldn't have gone over at all.
Yeah. At all. Like we were in 2004, we were like fresh off the 90s. Marvel and DC were still kind of sticking to a house style. Even with coloring, they were kind of sticking to a house style. It was a long time before I could get a foothold in DC, only because they were sticking to this like shiny, polished superhero look that they still do from time to time. But like they were like narrow focused on it for a longer probably than they should have been. But I'm there now, so you know. Things are good. I got Batman on the checks. That's what I care about.
How satisfying is it to be able to say like you've literally worked with almost every major comic book character? Like is that like a super satisfying thing to look at your CV and be like, yeah, I done that one.
Yeah, you say that, but I do have a bucket list of like comic characters that I would like to work on. But not just do like a cover, like do like a run. So like I still have, I don't think that's like, I don't think I'm ever going to like hit an end point of like, well, I did it all. Time to hang up the old Photoshop with the Spurs, you know, like I think that, you know, it's like an ever changing, like I just like, any comic book reader, like I, you know, discover pieces of comics and pieces of things that I didn't normally know before. And, you know, like, it's this constant, because like the industry moves forward and there's so many comics and they've been like around since the fucking 30s. Like, you know, there's no way to like take it all in and like get it all. You know what I mean? Like, wrap your mind around all of it. That, like, I feel like even though I've worked on a lot of characters, there's still a lot of characters that I want to still like leave my mark on.
So what would you say are your like top three bucket list characters? Because now I'm
top
interested.
Three bucket list is probably Deadman. I'd love to do a Deadman run. I really want to do a Buffy the Vampire Slayer run. And then I'm working on. Cable shows up in this Deadpool book, and he's actually was one of my bucket list guys.
Nice.
So I'm stoked on it. But I did not realize that coloring Cable is a goddamn nightmare.
It's all the pockets, man.
Yeah, man. The dude just like wakes
so many,
up, covers
so many
himself
pouches.
In glue. He covers himself in glue and then just rolls in pouches all like. He should not be allowed to dress himself. Full stop. Or, you know?
Oh, man. There's a Rob Liefeld joke in there, but I've already told all of them, so I'm going to keep it to myself.
For anyone who's not familiar with Cable, which for the, like, the two listeners out there, he's got like this like metal top like collar thing that is like – it looks like if you took a cutoff shirt and then – made it chrome and then stuck it to somebody. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous. I've actually been tweaking his costume a little bit for an Instagram post for putting him in like a Speedo thing. Cause with like a chrome top and like covered in pouches. I also kind of miss the old Marvel swimsuit issues that they used to do that were in terrible taste,
yeah,
by the way.
Absolutely. I have all of them. So, yeah, I'm with
like,
you on that.
They're an awful relic of the 90s, but they're still kind of interesting. I don't know.
So X-Force is like one of my guilty pleasures. Like, I don't read a whole ton of superhero books because it's just not the speed of comic I really read. But X-Force is – I have like a huge chunk of the X-Force collection. So I'm used to the weird, you know, biomechanical t-shirt that he wears and like the ridiculous amount of pockets and the gun that has like weird nodules all over.
Oh, my God. He like makes a gun out of nothing to shoot Deadpool in this issue, and the gun is bigger than him, of course.
Right.
I would love – I mean, it's a Deadpool book, so, you know, like there's a lot of jokes. Let me throw that out there.
Wait,
that's your hot take. Deadpool has jokes for listeners out there. But I would love, because it was like this page where Cable's like, you know, conjuring the gun out of thin air, and it's like this energy is crackling around him and stuff. And I would have loved it if he did that, and then it was like a little revolver, you know? Like, you think it's going to be a giant, like, machine, and he's just like, pew, pew.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
So you had mentioned that you're working on Heartthrob. Tell us a little bit about that book, kind of how it came to be and kind of what it's about. It's a really cool concept, but I want to hear you explain it because you're funny.
So Heartthrob is written by Chris Sabella. It's drawn by Robert Wilson IV. It's put out through Oni Comics. It's one of the – so I do this thing because I'm a colorist and it takes me about 4 to 5 days to do a book. I can do multiple books in a month. So like, you know, Deadpool, The Realm, you know, I'm doing a couple books through DC, American Way and Cave Carson. Like that all kind of pays the bills. But then like the Oni stuff on the side is kind of like, you know, I don't – it's not stuff that I have to do. It's stuff that I want to do. And Heartthrob is one of those like passion projects. It's set in the 70s. Like I said, it's got like a Fleetwood Mac kind of vibe to it. It stars Callie, who gets a heart transplant, and then she sees the guy whose heart it is. And since she's led this kind of like sheltered life because she had a heart defect, she's very naive. She jumps in like full force. She starts seeing this guy, and then she starts like dating this guy. And this guy is not the best dude ever. He is a con man. He is a thief. He's like he's like, I'm going to teach you how to steal. We should flip your desk at work and tell your bosses to go fuck themselves. Like, we're going to hit the road. We're going to get my old crew back together. We're going to start robbing banks. And she's just like all in on this relationship. So because she's so all in, she doesn't see the forest for the trees. She doesn't see like that this is turning into like a toxic thing. She's just like a passionate, passionate person. And she's got all this hot blood flowing through her. So she's like fucking all in. And so they kind of escalates from there. And the relationship eventually like turns sour. They turn toxic because it's like, you know, burning out. And like I said, it's compared to what was going on with Fleetwood Mac in Rumors. We actually did Jamie McKelvey did a Rumors variant of our characters like looking like the Rumors cover from Fleetwood Mac.
Awesome.
yeah, it's totally awesome. So yeah, we did so like with Fleetwood Mac, like everything's explosive and passionate, but then toxic and weird. And then like how does Callie get away from this dude who's like this manifestation of her heart? You know, like she can't actually physically get away from this guy, you know? So now it's like this weird, and this is where season two, which is going to start up soon. The final order cutoff is at the end of the month. Season two starts with her in Canada trying to like not steal. She's like trying to go legit before, but of course she gets pulled back in to like all the bullshit. And like she's also trying to like kick the habit of like relying on Mercer, who's the con man and thief, and relying on, you know, like she's trying not to backslide. For anyone who has ever backslid with an ex, this comic is for you. For anyone who loves the 70s, this comic is for you. Anyone who's like wanted to fucking burn down their regular place of work, this comic is for you.
So this like, comic's for everyone is effectively yeah, what you're much, saying.
Yeah. The elevator pitch is like somebody once described it as Fight Club, but with kissing. So yeah, there you go.
it's funny because I feel like there's a lot of people that when they think, oh, you know, Nick, they would think to themselves, Nick is just the colorist on the book. You know, he just colors in the pretty pictures. But you deal with the work constantly. Like you deal with like the piece that you're working on, and you're just as capable of describing the finished product because you've had to read it like over and over and over again because they've said, nah, I don't like the pink there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's more like in order for me to do my job and do it well, like, yes, I can like check in, do some color, check out, and then like, you know, go on with my day. But in order for me to like essentially like level up, I have to understand what's going on in the book. I have to understand the message that like the create, like, you know, that the writer's trying to say. I have to understand how the penciler and inker have like interpreted it and then like amplify it. I need to like take it from, you know, wherever, whatever volume level like the artist like was able to leave down on the page, and I need to crank it up, you know? So in order to do all that, like I have to be invested in the project, and, you know, so I'm invested in the project.
It's awesome. Like I said, I feel like there's this conceptualization that like, aside from the writer and like the penciler, you know, the other people are just ancillary. They're just kind of there. And that it's just not true. Like every inker and colorist and, you know, just whatever that's worked on any comic book, they're into what they're working on. And it's awesome.
And, you know, this guy Dylan does all of our graphic design for Heartthrob 2. And if you pick up the trade, it's beautiful. Like, you know, when you look at the trade cover, that is Dylan at work as much as it is me at work, as much as it is Robert at work, you know, because he's laying out all the graphic design for it, which affects. You're never looking at a comic. When you see a finished comic book, you're never looking at it as like a black and white page with no text on it. Like you're taking in all of these people who have had an impact in the overall finished product that you may not even realize. And I used to say that, you know, I feel like a colorist is best when you don't notice him. But I think that there's like a skill level. So if a colorist is like really bad, for example, you notice him. You're like, oh, the colors on this like are really tanking the work. And then when the colorist starts to get a little better, you don't notice him. You're just like, oh, I read this comic book. It was good. I, you know, whatever. You move on with your life. And then I feel like when the colorist gets like all the way around, you start to notice him again, but you start to notice him because his work is so good at complementing the work of the artist. And that's the thing, too, is I feel like a lot of colorists, sometimes they tend to overpower the art, you know, and that's not good either. You know, like you don't want to be, even if you are incredibly skilled and you're going in and you're doing like full painting, if you're overpowering the art, like you're not doing the job right. And I think that it's tough to balance and it's tough to understand. And like, that's the fucking battle. That's when I get up and I work on 5 pages a day. Like, that's the struggle that I'm trying to do. I'm trying to amplify what's on the page. I'm trying to make you not look at where the artist fucked it, if they fucked it. And I'm also trying to, like, you know, direct your eye in the story. I'm trying to, you know, enhance the visualization of the book. I'm trying out like a bunch of stuff that I'm trying out for me, because like I'm working on 5 books a month. Like I don't have time to experiment at all. Like when I experiment, it is down on the page. Like, and you know, like we did, I worked with Mark Bagley and Bendis on a book called Brilliant that thankfully not a lot of people have read, and I don't sign a lot of copies because that was the first time I tried digital painting and I was not good at it. Let me tell you, I was not in a good way. I was in the weeds for sure.
You're like, but oh God.
Yeah. But like, you know, I have that experience under my belt now. And if somebody was like, hey, we want to do like the Realm, the first issue for the Realm, we turned around the cover and I kind of did what I was doing in the interior of the book. And Jeremy Hahn was like, you know, can we go a little more painterly with this? And I was like, sure, because I have that experience under my belt now. I'm not like total panic, you know, meltdown. But you like you look at my career, and if you like plot out, like you start with like NYC Mech and Grounded that nobody has read through Image in like 2004. And then you see work like 3 years later, you can see the progression, because like, you know, everything that I've ever done has like been in print. Any experiment that I've done has been in print. So, you know, just as much as you follow an artist and see them grow, you can follow a colorist and see them grow as well.
Well, Nick, let people know how they can find you, like on Instagram and Twitter and all those different places, because I
sure
a you're really engaging and more people should talk to you, and b the reality is not a lot of people know about colorists, and more people should know more about the craft of the thing that they enjoy so much.
So if you're interested in my stuff coming out, I work on Cave Carson Has a Cybernetic Eye with DC Comics with Mike Oning, John Rivera, and Gerard Way. I work on American Way that's coming out soon from DC Comics with George Gentney and John Ridley. Of course, Oni and Heartthrob, which everyone should pick up. Everyone who is listening to this podcast should pick up Heartthrob. You have no excuse. The first trade is like $8 shipped on Amazon. That like leaves you no excuse. And the final order cutoff for the new arc is the end of the month, so you should pick that up. I'm working on that, of course, with Robert Wilson IV and Chris Sabella. I'm working on an unnamed Skybound project that's coming out soonish.
Nice.
I'm working
secret.
On Deadpool. Yeah, secret project. The thing about Skybound is, I don't know if you guys know this, but they do this thing where you got to get 6 issues in the can before they solicit the first one. So I'm like working on stuff, and as I'm working on it, I'm like, oh, people are going to really love this in like 8 months, maybe. Like, I'm like, I got to remember to tweet about this thing that I did like a year ago.
Right.
So that's coming out soon-ish. It's called the Pentagram Papers. Deadpool run is 287 to 291. Gary Dugan, Scott Kobolish. We did the 299 stuff. So if you like that, if you like the art in that, pick it up. And the Realm with Jeremy Hahn, Seth Peck. And then if you want to hear my terrible jokes, or rather read them, I'm on Twitter at Nick Phil, N-I-C-K-F-I-L. And if you just want the art, you're sick of me talking.
No jokes, just art.
No jokes, just the art. I understand. I got you covered. I'm on Instagram. It's Nick_Filardi on Instagram.
That's awesome, man. I'm super excited to focus more on seeing your work. You know what I'm saying? Like it's one of those things where with colorists, I kind of have to be, oh, hey, look at this, and being able to talk to you and listen to your process and stuff. Now I can actively seek out some of your books and be like, oh, okay, I get it. Like I get what he's talking about. So it's awesome. Thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. And anytime that you have some super awesome project that you want to talk about, hit us back up. We'd love to have you on again, man.
Absolutely will.
I'm Alex DeCampi, writer of No Mercy from Image Comics and Grindhouse from Dark Horse Comics. And you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. Because if you're thinking inside the long box, you're very small or very skinny.
Hello. Okay, we're
recording. And we're back.
Oh, you just deep throated that mic. Wow. Nobody's going to want to listen to us anymore.
Too much deep throats. Dude, people, that's why people listen to the show. That's
true. I'm so tired, sir.
Oh, you suck. Complain about me all the time and then you're sleepy, sleepy.
I just complain about you because I want to complain about you.
I know, just because you know it riles me up and then I start yelling.
And then I don't care.
Yeah, I know. Fuck you.
What are we doing? I think we just heard a...
So we just talked to Nick Filardi.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but we just heard a... Oh, I don't know how you want
to... Well, let's do that. We talked to Nick Filardi. He's a colorist on literally everything, but he was... talking to us about Heartthrob. That was an awesome interview. He's a great guy, and I hope he comes back on because he was rad to talk to. So he cracks me up. We talked a little bit about the conceptualization that like colorists are like worse than inkers, in that inkers are just tracers and colorists are just coloring a coloring book, you know? So it's fun. It's a good conversation. He's willing to poke fun at himself. So
if you can't, you're lame.
Oh, exactly. So
and he's not lame.
So it's time for our pop culture classic.
Yay!
Our pop culture classic this episode is Night of the Living Dead.
Part 2.
What?
I'm just kidding.
God damn it. They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Okay, and you're going to hear that trailer now.
Welcome to a night of total terror. Night of the living dead, the dead who live on living flesh, the dead whose haunted souls hunt the living whose bodies are the only food for these ungodly creatures. Of the living dead. A bizarre adventure in fear. An experience in shock more shattering than your strangest nightmare. Night of the living dead. A night with the dead who cannot die. A night of total terror. Night. Of the living dead.
Okay.
So scary.
So cheesy.
I know. So Night of the Living Dead came out in 1968, directed by George Romero. 1968? 1968, back when the Kaiser stole the number six. Directed by George Romero, it stars Dwayne Jones and Marilyn Eastman.
I was negative 19 years old.
Yeah, I was like negative 9 years old. So.
God, you're so old.
I know, I'm crazy old. So, a few...
I don't know.
So,
Night of the Living Dead.
A few fun facts. The zombies eating the body in the truck are actually eating...
When they're at the in the gas station part?
Yeah. They're actually eating a baked ham covered in chocolate sauce. And the... Which sounds disgusting.
Sounds really gross.
But the director, like the director of photography said, we probably don't even need to put makeup on the zombies because they look so gross doing this. Dwayne Jones.
Dwayne Johnson?
No, Dwayne Jones, the lead actor, told in an interview right before he died that he never saw any other of the Dead movies, George Romero's Dead movies.
Oh, wow.
Just the one he was in.
I wonder why that was.
He wasn't really into... like horror very much. Like it seemed like the part he auditioned for the part and ended up with it, they actually had to rewrite the script because originally like Marilyn's character was meant to be the main protagonist and like this strong, you know, woman. And it would have been more about a women's rights sort of movie than like a black rights sort of movie.
Right.
But he did so well in his audition that they actually rewrote the script towards that direction.
That's cool.
The house that the movie was filmed in was donated to them by a family that was going to destroy the house anyways. So they were allowed to literally do whatever they wanted with the house. That's why you see them nailing boards up and all that sort of shit. So, and then Tom Savini was actually originally hired to do the special effects on the movie, but ended up getting a different job. So he had to do that instead.
I wonder what the other job was.
He didn't get a different job. He had to go to Vietnam. The different job was going into the
going
military.
To war?
Yeah, it was going to war. I totally forgot about that. He got called.
Wow,
I think he was in the reserves and got called back into active duty. So he had to go to the Vietnams.
That's funny.
Which, yeah. It's a job.
His job was killing Vietnamese people.
Well, you don't know that. He may have just, you know, I don't know.
Injured some?
Yeah. Maybe he didn't shoot to kill. I don't want to talk about this anymore. This moment brought to you by Uncomfortable.
Gabe brought it up.
Not on purpose. But yeah, Tom Savini was originally hired to do the special effects and then ended up having to go back into military service, and they had to hire somebody else.
I forget that he does special effects.
Tom Savini?
Yeah.
Okay, so...
he does a lot of stuff, but I forget that.
This is an interesting age disparity thing. So you think of Tom Savini as being in, like, From Dusk Till Dawn and stuff like that, kind of as, like, a bit character actor. I grew up with Fangoria magazine, where every issue had an article of or an advertisement for Tom Savini's special effects makeup school that I wanted to go to so fucking bad when I was a kid.
You just wanted to go to makeup school.
No, I wanted to make monsters. I wanted to make gross things. But Tom Savini was in every single issue of Fangoria talking about this new Freddy the movie, this new Jason movie, this new Halloween movie, this new this that he was working on. Like his, if you go to his IMDb, there's more special effects credits than anything else.
No,
like,
for sure.
That's his thing. It's pretty cool.
When you say Tom Savini, the first thing I think of is Cock Gun. That's the first thing
I think of. He made that special effect. So
I'm sure he did.
He's all, I want a wiener pistol.
Wiener pistol sounds much better, by the way.
Cock gun.
I love this. So this version, you know, I like the colored version and the remastered, you know, blah, blah, blah. But this version of Night of the Living Dead or this particular movie, I regard personally as my favorite movie of all time.
Oh, really?
It's the movie that really got me into... So it's the movie that really... I can remember taking care of my nephews the first time I saw it at my sister's old place. and watching it in black and white and going, well, I don't know what this is, because I'd never heard of it. I was young. I never – there was no – you know, now when a movie comes out, you can read what it's about and you know and blah, blah, blah. Right. And it was a movie that drew me in and was – it just captured me. It was like, okay, this is – I can trace it back to that movie for my love for movies and entertainment, which is really cool. But it's for me, it's the my most favorite movie of all time, and I love it. It just happens to be a zombie movie, and I don't even know if that's why it captured my imagination, because I don't know if I knew what zombies were at the time. It was just crazy. Like, the whole thing was crazy. It was in black and white, which was not a thing for me still. I just loved it. I love everything about it. The acting is cheesy now. The score is weird, and the trailer looks weird. And I mean, it's definitely an old timey, low budget movie, right? But it was amazing when I first saw it.
It's clearly in the B movie category,
right?
You know, like, it's low budget, not a ton of, you know, not a ton of money was put into special effects, all of that sort of stuff. But for what they had to work with, it holds up. Like, sure, some of the dialogue's clunky, some of it's kind of cheesy, but like all of the other Dead movies, it has something to say that's important,
right?
And it manages to be ridiculously entertaining, right? Still, honestly, this is the second Dead movie that I saw Dawn of the Dead before I saw Night of the Living Dead. Okay. So that movie blew me away, and I was like, oh man, George Romero made other movies, and went back and watched this. And I genuinely don't think I've ever watched the colorized version of it. I think only ever seen it in black and white.
I think the endings are different in the two colored, in the two versions.
Like I said, I wouldn't know, because I haven't seen the colorized version.
Remember. It's been so long since I've seen the colored one.
Yeah. I like that it's in black and white, because I feel like it connects it to the roots of, like, the Universal monsters and, like, the old school, like, horror movies, right, from, like, the 50s and stuff like that.
To
like
me,
it feels like part – I mean, obviously it's not a Universal monster movie, right, but it feels like part of that canon of, like, the original monsters, Frankenstein, Dracula – you know, Creature from the Black Lagoon, right, The Mummy, and Night of the Living Dead are all kind of in that same, you know, they're not in the same era, but for me, they're the same, like, brand of movie, right, that, like, classic horror film.
The black and white, for me, makes it feel more, I don't know why, but it makes it feel more like a Southern movie, you know what I mean? Like I'm watching people from the South, and I'm pretty sure I don't know where it's at. I can't remember where it's actually at.
It's in Pennsylvania.
But it feels like, I don't know, I don't want to say rednecks, because that's kind of a shitty word to use sometimes, but it feels like a Southern movie. I don't know why. It just feels, it feels kind of more rooty. It feels more, how do I say it? It doesn't feel, the threat doesn't feel as global. And I think that's cool. I feel like it's happening just in this one spot.
Right.
I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing. I think at the end of the movie, when they're burning the zombies and everything, and it almost feels like it's done, which is kind of crazy. It almost feels like, we did it. We beat them.
Yeah. It's cool, because it doesn't have all of the trappings that, like, the modern zombie movie, right, has. It doesn't have all of the built-up zombie lore and history. It doesn't have, you know, 1,500 seasons of The Walking Dead under its belt. It doesn't have all the other George Romero movies under its, right, belt. It doesn't have all of the Return of the Living Dead movies under
its
belt.
Which are terrible.
To, like, inform all of, you know, what it is. It's just this singular, this is a zombie movie.
Right.
Zombies come out of the grave, they attack, the people fight back, some of them die, but they win.
Right.
Like, at the end of the movie, there's, like, a resolution to, right, it. And that's very, I mean, that's even different from George Romero's next movie. Like, Dawn of the Dead does not have a happy resolution. Right. Like, it just kind of is shitty, you know? Like, they fly away from the mall, and the mall is being surrounded by the zombies, and you know that there's, like, this globalized, right, threat. And like you're saying, it comes across as a victory. Like, there is a finite end to it.
Right.
And it's, I mean, it belongs to that different time when the good guys beat the monster, you know, and that isn't a thing anymore. And in a lot of ways, the monster isn't even really the zombies. It's like the social interactions mm-hmm. that they're having. Like the monsters are the other people. Like that, like that's something that Walking Dead explores right. really, really well right. now. That the monsters stop being the zombies and start being other human right. beings. You know, it holds such a soft place in my heart that when my wife and I went to Virginia the last time, we actually made a detour in Pennsylvania to go to the cemetery
right.
where those initial scenes in the film are filmed. And like, it's so cool because it's up this dirt road, up a hill, and you see it. You know, that scene where they're traveling and they come around the corner and the cemetery just kind of appears. Yep. You drive up that road and it does exactly that, you know, and you get that feeling in your chest of, oh man, like this is where it happens. Like, like I might get attacked by zombies right now, you know. And we had a picnic in the Night of the Living Dead nice. Cemetery. I mean, what a cool thing to be able to experience, oh, yeah. like literally a part of like cinematic history and a part of, you know, that was like really pivotal, like as a kid for me, right. like it was for you. I mean, it's just such a singular important movie. And what's crazy is it's in the public domain.
Right.
So, yeah, right. I mean, people are just like doing shitty DVD rips of it.
It's in the, it's been preserved by Congress, I think, too. Yeah. Yeah.
The only thing that I feel like is a bummer is that George Romero made like almost no money off of this movie because effectively the studio stole it from him. And when right. the copyright came up, he wasn't able to afford it. And so it just kind of went out into the ether and now it just belongs to the people. But it's an interesting financial situation for such an important classic movie.
Right. Well, it happens a lot with movies, even 20 years ago, you know, 25 years ago, you know, we always bring up Kevin Smith in the show, but it's the same thing for him in that he doesn't own Clerks. He doesn't own fucking Mallrats. He doesn't own these pivotal things that are his. So he has to ask for permission to play with them if he wanted to, which right. is lame.
And weird. Like, I'm glad I don't ever have to ask anybody permission to do stuff like this, you know?
But, I mean, they made – I'm sure – I know Romero is a fucking millionaire because of all of his other shit.
All the
but,
other
yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's – I loved it. Like I said, it's my absolute favorite movie of all time. And it's so weird because it's a 1960s movie. And it's weird because I don't know if I'm getting to the stage where I'm older and people are like, ah, I can see that happening. But a lot of older people than me – are like, when did you watch that movie? Or, you know, just the music I listen to or whatever. People are very surprised with my life, and it's kind of funny.
it kind of surprised me when you said that. Like, I mean, it's not – you seem like you like big action-y poppy stuff.
Right.
Like stuff that's just
– which I do.
Cheesy and hilarious and fun and over the top. And in so many ways, this movie is not that.
No, right,
like,
right.
Like it's very low budget. It's very low key. Like a lot of the action isn't action-y.
Right.
You know, it's just kind of
happening. And none of the fighting sounds match what's going on.
Yeah. There are some amazing, like, kind of flub moments like that.
But it started my love for the horror genre. I absolutely love anything that's horror. I don't give a fuck if it's an A movie or a Z movie. I love watching horror movies. It's just in me. Alicia hates it, so I got to find time to do it. But when we didn't have kids and we worked kind of opposite schedules, I had Netflix, and that's exactly what I did.
Right.
And there's no good horror movies on Netflix. Nope. So you'd watch.
Well, there's a few.
Well, yeah.
Very few.
But you'd be like, oh, fuck, that looks crazy just looking at the art. And I'd be like, all right, let's put it on. And it would either be amazing or it'd be horrible. But I loved watching horror movies. It's just something in me that, aside from anything else, horror is probably my favorite genre.
That's awesome. I mean, obviously, you know that about me. Like, I ran a whole website about horror everything and did publishing like in that vein and all that stuff. You know, it's interesting because like when you're talking about looking at the picture, the art on Netflix, I distinctly remember being the kid at the video store that was picking out the horror movie that he wanted to watch based on like the cover art and if there were boobs on the back. Like, like if there was a nice rack on the back, I was probably gonna check it out. My dad's like, oh, I don't know that this looks appropriate. Oh, it's okay, it's okay.
Well, they do a lot of on Netflix. There's a lot of like tourista kind of movies where it's a bunch of stupid people who land in a country where they don't know very well or whatever.
Right.
And I love stuff like that, but I just love horror. It's just a cool genre. I mean, you can get stuff that's, I love it because it's never the same. Comedy a lot of comedies are really, really similar. Where a lot of horror movies, you have things that are, you know, more thriller than horror, but they're still scary. And then you have what do they call porn gore or something like that.
Yeah,
you know, you can get torture porn. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. You can get there's a lot of different styles to horror movies that I love.
Right,
that's what,
like, a romantic comedy is a romantic comedy.
Right.
There's a lot of subgenres of horror films,
right,
like that run the gamut of like Shaun of the Dead to like right. Green Inferno.
I mean, a rom-com, you know what's going to happen. The two people are going to meet something. They're either going to fight and they're going to come back
and then
they're going to love each other in the end. Like, it has a certain fucking formula that
dies of cancer.
Always fucking follows.
Yeah.
And I love horror because it's so much different than that. It can encompass comedy and it can encompass, thrillers or suspense movies. It can encompass so much and still be a horror movie.
Right. I mean, and That's what's always appealed to me about it too, is, and it can say so much, like it can have like this really cool underlying message without even having to be like over the top about it. I mean, I feel like Night of the Living Dead is a little over the top in like its social message, just
right,
because of the way it's written, but
it was in the 60s.
But it was in the 60s. Yeah. But there's like this whole, like there's just this whole aspect of, you know, part of it's cheesy, part of it's gross, part of it's serious. Like, it runs the whole gamut of
right.
emotions in like one fairly short film.
Right.
You know, it's pretty cool. I love this movie.
Yeah, I rewatched it at work yesterday, so
I'm 100% with you. Like, I assume you're giving this a giant thumbs up.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So am I.
For
like,
sure.
This is hands down one of my favorite movies of all time. I mean, it's one that I revisit like every other year
right.
or so, just because I haven't watched Night of the Living Dead
right.
in a while.
Oh yeah.
I should watch that again.
I watch everything Romero, even if it sucks. Diary of the Dead was horrible, but I still watched it. I like Romero. His
and
kid makes movies. I mean, it's cool.
He's really nice too.
Is he?
Yeah. I met him at a convention one time and he was like just a super nice guy.
I don't think he does any conventions anymore.
No, not anymore.
Which kind of sucks.
Ridiculously old.
So what? Stan Lee's out there?
Not anymore.
Yeah, I thought
this
he was doing
like his last
yeah,
year.
But he's doing like one or two more things this year, I think, right?
He's doing like New York and San Diego and that's it.
No, well, he's like 100, okay? Romero is younger. Romero is younger. Not much younger.
Romero's that much younger. It's like Stan Lee's like 98 and George Romero's like 93 or something like that. Like, they probably could have gone to high school with each other back in 1905. Oh, man.
Oh, that's terrible. You're going to hell.
Probably.
Nobody said anything. We didn't get any. Everything's been kind of crazy the last few episodes.
Yeah.
So I was like, fuck, I need to remind everybody to watch this movie, and that didn't happen until yesterday.
Right.
So I apologize for everybody. I have no idea what we're watching next. I don't think we have anything slated. I have it on a sticky note here on my laptop.
So I think we're going to start watching the 10 movies
yes.
that we voted on.
But I didn't know if we had one other one to go before that. Nope. Night of the Living Dead was the last one we had slated.
All right.
So we've got I'll make a list today, but was it 10? 9, right?
There were 10 to start out with.
But 9 leading up to Mallrats,
which is the winner.
Okay.
Real quick, before we move on to what we're going to watch
okay.
next, if you do have an opinion on Night of the Living Dead, we would love to hear about it after the fact, just because,
for sure.
Warren said, it's been kind of crazy. So hit us up on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, facebook.com/thinkingoutsidethelongbox, Twitter and Instagram @outsidethelongbox, or you can give us a call on the Michael Kirk Memorial Hotline. Line, which is fucking amazing that we call it 970-573-6148. We would love to hear your opinions on it. I mean, it's such a pivotal movie that if you have a negative opinion of it, we are going to relentlessly mock you.
Yeah. Like, I don't know anybody that – I mean
– I've never met
I know people who are like, ew, I don't like to watch kind of scary movies.
Dom,
and that's
Dom, I'm looking at you.
But that doesn't really have anything to do with that movie in particular.
I posted – so we were talking about Blood Drive, the ridiculous – fucking oh, yeah. sci-fi movie, and Dom commented, I don't know how you can watch stuff like that, it's so scary. I was like, no part of this trailer looks scary. Like, it just looks stupid. Like, all of it looks stupid and ridiculous. That's not scary. They're using blood to run their cars, Dom. That's funny, not scary.
That's scary.
Too scary.
Yeah, I mean, I'll make a list of the next 9 movies that we've got to watch leading up to, so, and we may have to, we're almost certainly going to have to watch a couple at one time, because we only have probably 7 or 8 weeks until
the 13th of August, which, yes, is going to be awesome. Super stoked about it. So, let's decide on one of them. Can I decide?
I don't care.
Since I made
the list. I'm guessing you're choosing the redneck one.
Yeah, how'd you know? Have you seen this movie yet?
No, okay, it looks terrible.
No. Okay,
I don't remember if it was on Twitter or Facebook, but somebody's like, "Who are those fucking rednecks?"
So, we're gonna do this because you're talking about how much you love the horror genre right now. So we are going to watch what might possibly be one of my favorite horror comedy movies, and that includes like Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, which is more of a cop comedy movie, but is definitely horror when the steeple of the church falls on top of the guy. But we're going to watch Tucker and Dale versus Evil. And this, I'm telling you, Juan, you're going to get done with this movie and be like, why the fuck have I not watched this movie before? It stars Alan Tudyk and another dude that's dressed as a redneck.
Some big dude.
The movie is absolutely fucking phenomenal. It's about two guys and effectively miscommunications that end in like people getting thrown into wood chippers. Like it's.
Let's not ever miscommunicate around wood chippers.
Yeah. I can't wait for you to see it. You know, do we want to do one of the double features this time?
No, let me figure out what we've got
coming
up. Because
we could do Redneck double feature. Because we could do Tucker and Dale versus Evil and Bubba Hotep.
Bubba Hotep is amazing.
Dude, I'm telling you, if you like Bubba Hotep, you're going to love Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Let's wait okay. So that I can figure out, because we've got, we're going to my house next, yeah. Right, in 2 weeks. And then we've got Denver Comic Con.
Yeah.
And then we've got... And then we'll all be gone for 10. So we got San Diego Comic Con So the next couple months are going to be really weird.
Right.
So let me figure out what's going on with the schedule, and then I'll put out a list.
All right, cool. But for sure, next episode is Tucker and Dale versus Evil. You guys go out and watch this fucking movie. It is absolutely phenomenal. I want to hear your comments on this movie so bad. It is so fucking funny. Like, I love this movie.
It's got to be funny. Alan Tudyk's in it. It's got to be funny.
It's so good. Like, you have no idea how awesome it is.
It got like 1 vote.
Yeah, you know who it is. It's my wife.
No, I actually think it made it past the first round, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
There was a couple that didn't get any votes.
Did we maybe? Oh, I think we maybe only had 8 movies.
Oh, really?
Not 10, yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, but Tucker and Dale versus Evil for sure.
Okay. Watch that. So that's the next pop culture classic for next week.
And
in 2 weeks.
Sure, it may not quite be a classic yet, but give it 10 years and it will be.
I don't know when it came out, so fuck, it could be for all I know.
It's not that old. Okay. It's like 5-6 years old, maybe. Awesome.
Well, 2 thumbs up. I'm sure John gave Night of the Living
Dead. This is John. Thumbs up. Night of the Living Dead. Woo!
Hi, this is Chris Mowry, writer of Godzilla Rulers of Earth and employee of IDW Publishing, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. On the line, we have Barbara and Bryant from Fanbase Press. How are you guys doing this morning?
Very good.
Doing good. Thanks for having us.
Oh, of course. We love having fan base people on. You guys put together some pretty awesome comics. I am excited. We've
I think we've kind of covered the origin story of most of the comics that we have talked about from Fanbase. Okay. But let's hear the origin story of Fanbase Press just in general today.
Sure. I guess the origin really starts with one of our comics. We were actually our very first graphic novel, Something Animal, was a vampire story. The three co-founders of the company, Barbara, myself, and a third co-founder, Sam Rhodes, who has moved on since. We all went to college together, and when we first moved out to Los Angeles, we were all pursuing sort of different creative endeavors. Some of it was in film, some was in acting. I dabbled a little bit in creating my own self-published comic books, and we decided to shoot a short film version of Something Animal, and the comic book part of it was sort of just a side endeavor. We were going to use it as a marketing tool, help build an audience while we were editing the film. And once we started getting the artwork from the artist Robert Burrows, who hand-painted each panel, we were just so blown away that the comic book sort of took over. And we started going, hey, maybe this is the direction. Maybe this is the creative outlet. And I think as we started to go to shows and we started to encounter other people in the comic book industry, it just really felt like a home for us. We felt like this was a creative atmosphere that we were part of and that we were eager to, you know, take part in. And, you know, it's just sort of snowballed from there. I mean, more and more comics have been produced as years went on, and we got into other things with the site, everything from podcasts to interviewing other creators to doing reviews of comics, movies, theater shows, a little of everything. So it's really grown. Fanbase Press has sort of grown into being a full-fledged publisher, as well as I guess our home of geeky things, somewhere where you can go and experience something for everyone.
It's awesome. I like that it's evolved. Like, you know, you had big plans for one thing and it kind of went, oh, let's just go the comic book route. And now you have all of these different, you know, podcasts and comics and just all these different things. Like, what is it that kind of inspires and drives you to continue like in this creative like endeavor? I mean, obviously it's a lot of work. Doing anything like this is a lot of work, but what is it that drives you guys to keep going?
I think it's the love of artistic endeavors and the arts and expression and creativity and really just not only fostering that love within ourselves, but also of other people as well. And that's a big part of the founding mission of the company, as well as our everyday actions, that not only are we putting out our own creative endeavors, but we're also doing as much as possible to promote the works of others, and also just to assist other creators who may be just starting out or more experienced in giving them a platform and a voice to share their work. So that's why we do a lot of the reviews, the interviews. We invite other creators from all different entertainment mediums on to join us as guests for our podcasts throughout our network. And we also answer a lot of questions for creators who may be new to the field. You know, how do you find an artist? What is the production process like for creating a comic book? How do you market? And we do a lot of panels at conventions throughout the U.S. as well to answer these questions as much as possible.
I would also add that I think like we really, Barbara and I talk a lot about getting a lot of our creative motivation from, at this point, you know, having produced several books, having several podcasts going on. It's the interaction with fans at conventions or even online, where they just are so appreciative that these things exist. And, you know, I wouldn't say that we think of Fanbase Press as some sort of huge, you know, force that's affecting everyone. But you do have those moments where someone's like, oh, you know, this story really touched me, or I love this podcast, or thank you so much for reviewing my book. You know, it's the best review I've gotten so far, or it's my favorite review. And I think those moments really give us motivation just to keep doing things, because we just love being part of that community and interacting with individuals like that.
That's awesome. With, you know, with reaching out and like kind of working with other people like that are trying to create independent comics or independent, just kind of anything, what is like kind of the one main piece of advice that you guys like to give people when they're just starting out
you know, trying to get their, you know, their foot in the door, so to speak, with this kind of endeavor?
I think the thing that we most often share is that no matter your resources or your abilities, it's 100% possible for you to create something and to put it out there for audiences to enjoy. And really, there's no one right way to do it. I know that there, you know, a lot of people will pursue or recommend, you know, this worked for me, so you have to do it this way. And really, we've been such an unconventional company, and even our model itself, that we create media and we also promote other media, is such a strange duck, as it were, in the field, because you don't see a lot of other companies like that. But we found that it's worked for us. And so we really recommend that people do what they can, you know, especially in a medium that, as you mentioned, you know, people aren't necessarily making millions of dollars in the comic book industry. But if you're someone with limited means or limited financial resources, there are so many different opportunities and resources available for you out there, whether it's doing it digitally or making, you know, if you like and prefer printed, taking your materials to Kinko's or another copy place and making zines, you know, self-copied materials. There is no, you know, there's no one right or proven way. And if it works for you, I'd say go for it.
It's awesome hearing somebody say making a zine, because I haven't thought about doing that for such a long time. I used to do that all through high school, and like just the satisfaction of like, I've created this little magazine that like I can distribute to my friends is, I mean, it's just incredibly satisfying, because you've literally created something from cover to cover, and it's kind of cool. Like, very much the same feeling that I get every time we wrap an episode of the podcast, where I'm like, hey, I did this thing. It's awesome. It's so much fun. And I mean, just the enjoyment of it is what keeps me coming back to it.
Exactly. And I think that's the feeling. Yeah. I think that's the feeling that we want everyone to have, is just that feeling of, I did this. It makes me happy. It's fulfilling. And that's such an amazing and important feeling for people to experience. And so we want that for everyone.
Yeah. We can both come like from theater backgrounds. And I feel like that's where this kind of bug really bit us, where you really, you know, are working with a group and sort of putting something together. And, you know, obviously there's, again, not a ton of money in stage theater as well. So, there really is a love of the craft or a love of the show that sort of pushes you forward. And I think, as Barbara was saying, there's just so many alternatives out there now for people to do stuff on their own, whether it's being able to podcast or make videos and put them up on YouTube or make a zine or a digital comic or a web comic. And I would just echo Barb's words even more so, saying like, you know, definitely you can do these things. And even more so, if you really do want to be a creator, whether professional or a different lesser level, it's never going to hurt to be doing something. A lot of people feel like, oh, I have to wait till I reach this certain level of skill, or I have to be this good before I can try anything. And I think they end up holding themselves back and keeping themselves from learning or experiencing a lot of things, where, you know, in all honesty, sometimes it's best just to get out there and try, get your hands dirty and learn as you go.
You know, it's interesting. Juan was talking about a guy that just kind of started listening to the show, and he had gone from our latest episode backwards. So, okay. You know, he listened to the good shows first and then like the super shitty shows last. And there was like this moment where I felt like embarrassment that he had listened to those shows. But that's exactly what you were talking about. Like, when Juan and I started to do this, it was just like, look, I've done a couple other podcasts. He had never done a podcast before, but fuck it. Let's jump right in, you know, and that mentality is exactly what you need to do. And we talk about it a lot at the end of every show, is if you have a project that you want to do, you know, stop farting around and just go out and do it. Cause what's the worst that can happen? Like, you're a terrible artist and you make a zine at Kinko's, you know, and your friends will probably be nice enough to be like, yeah, that was cool.
Definitely. And Barbara and I always like to share this one, little, I guess, fun fact from our podcast origins. Our very first podcast, I had to convince Barbara that people would want to even listen to us. And then we didn't have a ton of equipment. So the four hosts that started off, I guess the podcast was called the Fanboy Scoop at the time. We literally had a USB mic provided out of a Rock Band video game set. And we just plugged that into our computer, and we would raise our hands, and that would be the signal to each other, like, oh, I have something to say, and you would pass the mic, because there was one mic to share for the four of us. And, I mean, you know, it worked to a degree. It was a rough podcast, but you could listen to it. It wasn't impossible, and it taught us a lot, and that's how we got started.
It's funny, the first podcast that I ever did, I was also in a band at the same time. So I had like a lot of the equipment, but it was all for like venues. So I had like a 16 channel soundboard like out in my office desk, and like, you know, the mics that are all beat up from shows that we've played, stuff like that. It's the same kind of thing where it's just like this trash punk band equipment being cobbled together and then like plugged in through 15 different switchers to make it go into my computer. Like, it's the same kind of thing. It's fun. Like, and that kind of like DIY ethos of like, let's just create things. I mean, why wouldn't you want to do that? It's amazing.
Totally agree.
So let me switch gears for just a little bit. Fanbase has a ton of stuff coming out. Why don't you tell us about some of the things that you guys are excited about from Fanbase right now?
Sure. Well, first, thank you for having so many of our creators on your podcast. We love listening to your show, and we're so honored to have so many creators share their projects with your listeners. So first, thank you for that. A few of the projects that we're really proud of right now, one is Kintsé, which is the 15-issue digital comic book, digital first comic book series about a little girl named Lupe who gets superpowers on her quinceañera, but she only has them for a year. And we stick with the Kintsé theme, so it's 15 issues. It comes out on the 15th of every month in English and Spanish on Comixology. And then we will be releasing a collected trade paperback version this October. And for those listeners who purchase or pre-order, rather, a copy of the trade paperback before, I think it's mid-June, they receive exclusive artwork from Emma Steinkellner, the artist.
Nice.
And then we also have another female-led superhero team book coming out. It's called The Gamma Gals. This is by creator Stefano Terry. He's both the writer and the artist. And we have two episodes of that, or two issues of that released so far on Comixology. It's another digital first series where we're going to release the issues digitally first and then put out a physical collected volume. But this one is very much like in the vein of something like The Flash or Spider-Man. It's a trio of girls who are basically just trying to do that parallel life where they're the normal kids at school who love hanging out and playing Dungeons and Dragons, but then they also have been blessed with these superpowers. And so, you know, whatever supervillain may show up in the city, it's up to them to defeat it and save the day.
What you had mentioned some of the podcasts you do. I guess I'm not super familiar with the podcast. Could you tell me about some of those too?
Sure.
Sure, absolutely. So as Bryant mentioned, when we started actually the company 7 years ago, and the name of the company was Fanboy Comics. And although the company was always about inclusivity and making everyone feel welcome, a little over a year ago, we decided to rebrand to Fanbase Press because we wanted everyone to be very clear about that sense of inclusivity and our mission from the get-go. As soon as you saw our name, we wanted you to be aware of that. So initially, though, when we were Fanboy Comics, we did a weekly podcast, which we've maintained for the past 7 years. It was initially called the Fanboy Scoop Week in Review. Now it's called the Fanbase Weekly. Before we rebranded, I think we had recorded something like over 250 episodes. Yeah. But mm-hmm. essentially, it's a geek news panel discussion podcast that discusses the news of the given week. And we usually have four co-hosts, and we always invite an industry guest. And that can be any avenue of entertainment, whether it be theater, comics, film, TV. We've had voiceover actors, a little bit of everything. And it kind of gives listeners an opportunity not only to learn about the projects that they're working on, but to give them a more full sense of who they are as people and what they enjoy geeking out about.
Yeah, it's like hanging out at the table while they talk about like the latest trailer or breaking news on whatever, Green Lantern, Alien, whatever.
Sure. So the Fanbase Weekly is still maintains a weekly schedule. In the event that we are away for a weekend doing a convention, we have Fanbase Features, which are special editions of the podcast. And they're usually either panel discussions with our staff and contributors on recent films or TV shows, or we also do lengthy one-on-one interviews that go more in detail into a creator's body of work. So that's one of our podcasts.
Other than that, we also have the Arkham Sessions, which is just an amazing podcast. I'm sure everyone listening, if you are even remotely a fan of Batman the Animated Series, you definitely want to check this one out. This is co-hosted by Dr. Andrea Ledamundi and Brian Ward, and they basically take a look at every single episode of Batman the Animated Series from a psychological perspective. They examine Batman's rogues gallery. They examine Batman himself and sort of tell you, you know, their interpretations of what these characters might be suffering from and why they make the choices that they do. We also have another podcast that's very similar. It's not from a psychological perspective, but it's an examination of another TV series, the 80s sitcom Family Ties. This podcast is called Quality Time with Family Ties. So I got three different co-hosts, including Barbara's brother, Paul Packler, and they take a look at each episode, Family Ties, and sort of discuss it in a comedic sense, but also in examining sort of the political climate of the country at the time when the episode was released, so you can kind of get a sense of what the creators behind the series were perhaps being influenced or reacting to when they were writing the series. And then we have one more that Barbara will share with
you. Sure. The last podcast that we have is called Tread Perilously, and this is a podcast where hosts Eric Amaya and Justin Robinson visit they visit really popular television shows, but they watch the worst episodes of those series to see if that was the very first show that they had watched of the series, whether they would continue on watching the show. It's hysterical. If you're a fan of We Hate Movies, it's very much in that same vein, yes. And they're just absolutely hysterical.
That's awesome. Those all sound really good. The Arkham, the psychological take on
the Arkham Sessions.
Yeah, that sounds unbelievably cool. I'm gonna have to go and listen to all of those. So
definitely,
I now have a job where I can listen to things while I'm working. So I'm really excited to catch up on like an ass load of podcasts. So
sure.
So you had mentioned the change from Fanboy to Fanbase Press as like a move to like indicate like your inclusivity, and like, you know, the other creators that we've talked to like about Kinsey and about Gamma Girls and stuff like that. That's a huge part of kind of the messaging that you guys put out as a company. Talk to me a little bit about how you came to focus on that, you know, as such an important part of your business model.
Sure. So for us, the message of feeling welcome is always something so inherent in the geek community and geekdom as a whole. I feel like so many individuals who have come to love and embrace all different mediums within geekdom have felt that perhaps at one time or another. So for us, that's always been very important as part of the company. And while that was always there as Fanboy Comics, Fanboy used to be just kind of this catch-all term. I mean, I feel like we've been doing the company for so long. You know, we started at a time when...
it was like geek. That's exactly the way we viewed it. It was like an equivalent to something like geek or nerd or something like that.
Right. But
in a positive sense.
Absolutely. But even as a woman myself, and then in working with a number of our female staff and contributors, they felt very comfortable sharing that, you know, when they would speak with other women, just sharing the name Fanboy Comics was not as comfortable, or, you know, some people it didn't seem like a safe space. And for us, that was just heartbreaking. We really wanted everyone to feel safe and welcome and to have a place in our company. So not only in rebranding the company and changing the name, but in feeling a sense of responsibility that, you know, as we have this continuing, not only nationwide, but worldwide conversation about what is it to be welcoming and inclusive and mindful of other individuals and other perspectives, and just to have respect for all individuals, we felt that that was just as important in our publishing as well. So as publishers, and Bryant, I don't know if you want to add anything, sure. But excuse me, we just felt like we needed to have more perspectives. We, especially this year, we in publishing the Gamma Gals and in publishing Kinsei, we really want to show that everyone can be a superhero. And that's why we're having so many different perspectives, so much diversity, not only with regard to gender and race, but also physical abilities, especially in the Gamma Gals, that is present in sexual orientation.
Body types.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's even present in Hero Hotel, which was one of the books that we released late last year, but still seems to be in this sort of superhero wave that we're doing right now. But yeah, I would agree with everything Barbara said. The only thing I would add, I guess, and I think Barbara feels the same way, but feel free to speak up if I misquoting you in any way. But I think we've also always believed that art and I guess in sort of a parallel fashion, geekdom as a whole are, they're not frivolous things. I mean, they can be. I mean, you can go see, you know, whatever, Captain America's latest film and be like, oh, that was just fun and it was a good popcorn movie or whatever. Or you can, you know, go play an RPG and be like, well, I was just enjoying myself with my friends. But I do feel like inherent to all these stories, whether you're looking at something like Star Wars or Superman or the Alien franchise or whatever your cup of tea might be, there are inherent messages here. They're not supposed to beat you over the head, but I think they are supposed to help you, you know, deal with the world around you, disguise your own feelings on morality, your own feelings on acceptance and inclusion. And, you know, I think for Barbara and I, it's really important that we show that there's more to art and geekdom than just, I guess, some of the shallow definitions that sometimes get stuck on pop culture art. And, you know, comics have always been telling stories and sort of affecting the way people think and the way they interpret, the world around them. And we just hope that that's the same thing that we can continue to do. We want to continue that tradition and create stories that are, yes, entertaining, but also impactful and make people think and make them consider viewpoints that maybe aren't their own.
You know, it's interesting. One of my friends said something to the effect of, anybody that was a giant fan of X-Men through the 80s and 90s can't possibly be comfortable with what's going on in the world around us. And it really speaks to that same, you know, sentimentality that pop culture is always speaking towards those kind of things that are taboo, like how the X-Men is really about race relations, you know, and later on in the episode, today we're going to talk about Night of the Living Dead. Like, that's the same thing.
Sure.
Like, yeah. It's way more about race than it is about zombies. You know, there's so many different, you know, comic books and TV shows and movies that are speaking towards broader themes, and that's what makes them influential. That's what makes them important. You know, it's easy to just dismiss, you know, something like the Avengers as, oh, it's just pop culture, whatever. But really, pop culture is how, you know, we as people are venting our emotions and our opinions just in a way that's entertaining and hopefully in the long run makes, you know, somebody a living somewhere along the line. Certainly not. Certainly I don't make a living at pop culture, but maybe someday.
And when you get to participate in that conversation, you know, that, like, that's what I really love, is we are in a wealth of pop culture entertainment right now. And it's, people have really grabbed onto, like, the serialized, you know, form of storytelling. And they've also really gotten into stories that have substance beyond just, you know, the flash of special effects and the spectacle. And so, I mean, I can just think of, like, we have Alien Covenant that came out this weekend, and we have Guardians of the Galaxy that came out a few weekends back. And no matter what you think of those films, you can grab certain elements, whether it's, like, say, what does the Alien series say about corporate entities taking over and how they crush the individual? Or say, like, Guardians of the Galaxy, what does it say about fatherhood and how fathers affect their children both positively and negatively? Like, these are things that are in there. You don't immediately feel like, oh, you know, I know immediately this is only about fathers or this is only about whatever, this other element. But the DNA of the story includes these explorations. And for me, I just love sitting down with my wife or my friend or whoever, a stranger that happens to, you know, be wearing whatever, a Guardians of the Galaxy patch on their shoulder or something, and engage them about like, oh, what did you think about these themes? What did you think about what the story had to say? How did, you know, what's that make you think about things in your world? You know, these are great conversations, and they start in a place of enjoyment, but they lead to a place of education and enlightenment.
Yeah, it's that doorway. It's that chance to like open up and have a discussion about something more important than just Guardians of the Galaxy. You know,
flying raccoon.
It was fun. It's hilarious. I loved the movie, but you know, I was bawling my eyes out because I didn't necessarily have the best relationship with my dad, and I'm sitting there watching it with my son. You know, and sure. I'm like. Be a good dad, but not like Yondu. You know, it's cool. And it's important, and it's fascinating to think. You know, we make these distinctions, like especially on like academic levels, between high culture and pop culture. You know that the yes. that a Rembrandt is high culture or Shakespeare is high culture and all this other shit. But when you look at it, Shakespeare was not high culture at the time. It was pop culture. It's just stood the test of time to where it's still popular and entertaining now. And so we say, oh, well, it's very important. Well, you know what? The X-Men and, you know, Hellboy and, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy, they've been around for decades. Like, yep. Get over it. Stop making this the distinction that this isn't as important because it comes in a serialized comic book format. Like, that it doesn't make any kind of sense. Like, the Greek tragedies, you know, that you read in college were the pop culture of the Greeks. You know,
yeah,
it's just that they've been around for way too long.
Yeah, I mean, you can say the same about most of Charles Dickens' work. You know, it was essentially something that was seen as disposable at the time, you know, a form of entertainment, and now we consider it, you know, a classic form of literature. And so I think there is an importance of not losing the stuff that might be seen as accepted, you know, literature or accepted as like great classic works. Those are still need to be treated with a certain respect, but it doesn't need to be done in a way where it looks down on pop culture, because it's just, as you said, that the worth and the value of those stories, you'll find out down the road. I mean, we're only 20 years out from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but they had a huge 20th anniversary celebration this year. And I don't know about anyone else who's listening, but for me, my page was just filled with people talking about how this series affected their lives in ways that was way beyond like, oh, I liked this character or remember this moment. It was things about, this helped me get through, you know, really hard points in my life. This helped me discover things about myself that I didn't know. This, you know, helped me connect with family members or friends that I was ostracized from. So, I mean, I do think that these things are way more influential than people initially give them credit for.
Yeah. In the case of our podcast, pop culture has literally brought me two of my best friends, like, that I never would have even known or hung out with if it wasn't for this ridiculous show. I mean, so, I mean, it's important, and it's cool that you guys – As a company, recognize how important the inclusivity of geek culture is because of that nature of it, that it's something that draws us together. You know, I think we've talked on the show in the past about how it used to be when television was more just, you know, ABC, NBC, CBS. There was like that combined conversation when something big came out because it's the thing that everybody watched. Now that pop culture has become more niched with like the internet and stuff like that, those segments still exist, maybe not on the same level, but it all draws us together. It all makes it more of a community where we can say, oh, I like this, I like this. And, you know, you end up talking with somebody about Buffy for 6 hours because it helped them get through a divorce or whatever. So I don't know. It's awesome. Sorry.
It definitely is.
That was me getting saccharine for a second. Sorry, guys.
we are all fine with saccharine. The one thing I'll just throw out there that I do think ties into what you're saying is, you know, I think geeks, we go one of two ways. We're either like, it's almost like what I would call the punk rock question. You either think like, oh, punk rock is dead once it starts to get popular, or you want to be able to share it with others, you know? And I think that's where we are in geekdom. There are some people, they call them gatekeepers. I think some individuals call them gatekeepers, but they're people that feel like, hey, I was here when this thing first started. It's my thing. Don't just come in here. And then there are other individuals that are like, this is never going to become anything more than this niche, you know, interest or community, unless we have open arms when people are interested in it. And I just think that's, you know, you got to choose which way you want to go. And for us, obviously the way is to say, no, let's make this bigger. Let's let everyone be part of this.
That's awesome. Well, speaking of letting everyone be part of it, how do people find out about Fanbase Press?
Sure. You can find us at our website, which is fanbasepress.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. On Twitter, we're at fanbase_press. We're also on Instagram, MZ, LinkedIn, iTunes. You can subscribe to all of our podcast networks.
See us at the local cons in the Southern California area.
Absolutely. Next weekend, we will be at Phoenix Comic Con. We'll also be at San Diego Comic Con, Los Angeles Comic Con. We try to hit as many as possible throughout the year.
Yes.
That is awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much again for being on our show. You know, we here at Thinking Outside the Long Box are big fans of Fanbase Press. You guys are putting out the kind of things that I enjoy reading. So thank you so much. And yeah, we can't wait to have you on again. Please let us know whenever you guys have something awesome coming out.
Well, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for your support.
Of course.
This is John Riley, writer of Harold Lovecraft and Tesla. You're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Yeah, we're back.
Oh, and we're back.
Fuck her. Mila, your fucking last name I can't pronounce.
Mila Jovovich.
Jova bitch. Oh, wow. Jeez, that was mean.
That was harsh. I didn't even say it either. You're the one that said it for the official record.
Come be on our show. I'm sorry.
Oh, man. So I don't really have a good old man pick.
You never do. No. You're the only old man here.
I know.
You need to have an old man pick.
So I do have an old man pick, but it's not like a really great one. It's kind of weird. So I stumbled across, I think it was on like Comic Book Realm or something like that, like a website. And it was like a clickbait article about the 15 worst G.I. Joes of all time, which was hilarious. Like refrigerator.
I didn't even know there was more than one G.I. Joe.
No, like figures, like the 15 worst figures. Okay. So there was, you know, like the refrigerator Perry figure and like Headman, who was a drug dealer that wore like a pimp hat and a pinstripe suit.
Oh, wow.
And then just like a domino mask, you know, to mask his identity or whatever. And it got me thinking about how in the long, long ago, you would make a toy and then make a cartoon based on the toy.
Right.
Like that's kind of how G.I. Joe came about, how He-Man came about, that sort of thing, where the cartoon ended up being more of a vehicle for selling the toy than vice versa. There's a certain aspect of like action figures that kind of bums me out. Our friends Ryan and Eric, they went to Japan recently.
Mm-hmm.
And they were posting all these pictures of like these amazing, like collectible, high end, you know, toys. You know,
right.
This amazing Batman, this amazing Joker, this ultimate muscle wrestling ring.
Oh yeah, yeah, I
had,
saw
like,
that.
The 12-inch like dolls, like actually doing wrestling moves on each other and stuff like that. And that's all well and good. Like if you want to collect high end toys, that's awesome, and all that stuff is rad. But the problem is it's made it so that action figures and action toys are largely inaccessible to kids. Because even if I go to Target to buy, like if I wanted to buy my kids G.I. Joes, which I never really have because they're too expensive, because there's such a quote unquote collector's market, which there really isn't.
Right.
Like this idea that like toy speculation is going to make you a bajillion dollars is just not true. But because of that like perception that there's like this speculation market for toys, I can't go buy Hannah her favorite wrestler toy
right.
at
at Target because it costs 25 fucking bucks. And I'm not paying 25 bucks for an action figure. You know, when I was a kid, I could take my allowance for the week and buy a G.I. Joe.
Right.
You know, the allowance that my son gets from both households are not going to pay for like even like a Lego set or anything.
Legos are expensive.
Legos are ridiculously expensive. There's so many and this is more like a complaint than like a pick. There's so many people that are trying to make money off of nostalgia and off of childhood and like this idea that like somebody my age is going to be interested in buying a toy that is technically for kids.
Right.
There's so many people trying to make money off of that that it makes toys, I feel, largely inaccessible to kids. Some of my favorite memories are of walking to the summer that I lived in Pennsylvania, there was like a general store that was like about 6 blocks away from my house. And I would take my allowance that my grandma sent me because, you know, we lived in a different state.
Right.
I would walk to that store and I would buy like a blister pack of Muscle Men and a blister pack of Monster in my pocket. And I would take them home and go play with them. My kids don't have that experience.
Right.
My kids have never gone to Target and bought a G.I. Joe or bought a He-Man or bought a Muscle Man or bought a Hot Wheels.
Right.
You know, those are like the only toys that are affordable because a Hot Wheels is still a buck. Oh, yeah. You know?
My kid has about a fucking 100 of them.
And so does Hannah. Jesus. Hannah's always asking me when we're at the grocery store, can I buy a toy car? Because that's like the only thing that she says, can I buy a toy car? And dad's going to not say, no, it's too expensive. You know, I feel like the point of toys is that kids should be playing with them.
Right.
But because of this idea that if I keep it on card in 20 years, I'll be able to sell it for 10 times as much, blah, blah, blah.
So $20.
So it's $20. Yeah. Well, no, it's $20 now because somebody thinks that when they're 35, they're going to be able to sell it for 50. You know, and it
who cares? Is $30 really worth it?
No.
To save something for 20 years?
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, and don't get me wrong. I have a few like on card toys, right? But I have like the Masters of the Universe muscles,
right,
that I've kept in the blister packs just because I don't want them to get mixed up with my other Muscle Men so that I can't find them. You know, because they all are like little pink erasers. Right. You know, I have the random colorized Muscle Men that I found on card at like at a flea market and bought for like $2.
Right.
I've just kept that way just cause, you know, because I'm an adult and
I'll get you some more when I go to San Diego.
Yeah. Like, I mean, but I'm an adult, so I don't like play with the toys.
Right.
I don't feel obligated to take them out
of
the package.
Right.
But if my daughter asks me to play with my Muscle Men, I'm going to sweep them off of the thing and just lay them out on the floor for her to play with because that's the point of them. You know, and it just bums me out because, you know, I'm looking at this list of the 15 worst G.I. Joe figures ever created, and I owned like 6 of them. And when I was a kid, I fucking loved them. You know, I loved the guy that his job was to parachute into combat zones and draw on the notebook what the combat zone looked like. That was one of the characters that they were making fun of, and it's such a stupid idea, but his figure came with a parachute, and you could throw him in the air, and he would parachute down, you know? I just have so many good memories of playing with action figures that it bums me out that you don't see kids playing with action figures, really, because they're just too fucking expensive. Like, I mean, I can't go buy my son a shitload of G.I. Joes because they're going to cost me like $8 each or some asinine amount like that. Wow. Yeah. So I don't know. My old man picks more of a rant than a
– That's okay.
Than a
– You rant a lot anyway.
But I love toys. And it bums me out that kids don't really have toys to play with.
Right.
But yeah, that's my old man
pick. Nice. We don't – Johnny's way more into – He's got a fucking giant amount of stuffed animals. He loves stuffed animals. The only other real toys that he like actively tries to collect to play with are like Paw Patrol things and Octonaut things. But everything else is like a mishmash of shit he gets from Christmas and things like that. But he'll fucking climb to the bottom of his toy chest to find a, you know, an Octonaut thing or right. something like that. But
Hannah's the same way with Octonauts. And what's nice about them is they're totally affordable.
Right. The little men are affordable, but the boats and things like that, they can definitely get a little expensive.
But that's
for sure.
How G.I. Joes were too. Right. Like it used to be you could buy like the G.I. Joe figures for like a reasonable amount. But if you wanted like one of Cobra's jet planes, or something like that. That's what you got for Christmas.
Right.
You know, you bought all the Star Wars action figures you could buy with your allowance. And then for Christmas, you asked for the Ewok Village or the Millennium right. Falcon. And, you know, that's when your parents like spent a couple extra bucks right. to buy you something big for Christmas. But throughout the year, you know, you're at the grocery store, which used to have action figures at it, you know, and comic books right. for that matter. And you would say, hey, can I pick up this issue of X-Force and a G.I. Joe? And it was like, you know, $7 for both right. of them. So your parents were like, yeah, that's okay. Like, that's not the end of the world. Now if my son's like, hey, can I pick up this G.I. Joe at the grocery store? It's like $9.
And New Mutants 98.
And New Mutants 98, which is only like $300. The only comic book that you can buy at the grocery store anymore is Archie.
And Archie rules. I like Archie.
Yeah. I have a stack of the digests if you want to take them home.
Nice. Let's give them away.
Dude, who wants a bajillion?
All kinds of people love Archie. Okay. I still have not... You know how busy I have been? I still have not told the Sandman winner that she won a Sandman thing.
Oh my gosh, tell her tomorrow.
I have to literally write myself memos on my phone to remember to do things because I fucking been so busy. And then somebody crashed into our car, so we were down to one car for 3 weeks. It's just fucking been nuts.
Dude, so opening this new restaurant, I got like a one subject notebook.
Oh, side note, but I always made time for TOTLB.
I always make time for
it. I'm just saying. No,
it's
just
right here, right now.
This was just Juan just saying that. That's
all. More notes than you.
That's all. Juan was just saying that.
So I picked up a one subject notebook. I was like, I'll just take notes in this and I'll, you know, figure it out from there. I've filled up the notebook in like 2 weeks. I'm like, Jesus, I've taken more notes now than I think I took in my entire high school career.
So, important question.
Yeah.
Can I buy. Not into the restaurant because it sounds like. Well, let's not talk crap about your new job. Can I buy a little spinner, put some homies in it, and I'll put it in the restaurant? Yeah, little thingy, little coin machine. Put some homies in it.
Oh, probably they probably wouldn't let you do that. Not that restaurant.
Come on,
not that restaurant. I know a few people I can talk to that can probably get you one of those, though. You should do that. You should go just into Fort Collins and be like, hey, I got this little thing. I want to sell homies from it. I guarantee you find somebody to do that for you. You know where you should go to?
I was hoping you'd be giving me the homie hookup. That's all I'm saying.
I can't. Like, that's weak. It's not my restaurant. I just work there. You should go to Village Vidiot in Fort Collins.
I don't even know what that is.
Village Vidiot is a fucking video store that it like because like video is effectively like video stores are effectively dead. They focus on getting like the random weird shit
right.
that like you're never going to find in a Redbox, you know, Criterion Collection stuff, random ass horror movies, all sorts of weird like exploitation like films that have been put onto Blu-ray for the first time
right.
and stuff like that. So it's just this video store full of like all the insane shit. Like it's so cool. Like it's a really cool idea.
That's weird.
It's like 3 blocks away from my work and I'm really seriously considering getting a video membership there.
You're silly.
I am silly. Well, with that said,
I'm tired.
Juan's tired, so let's wrap up this episode.
Who did we interview? Let's thank some people.
So we interviewed Fanbase Press. Their names are beautiful.
Really? It's
wonderful names that their parents named them.
Barbara and Bryant. How hard is that for you to remember?
I just forgot. And then Nick, who has colored like literally every comic book ever made.
Ever.
Ever.
Ever. Since the first
since the
amazing Spider-Man.
First comic book
oh,
ever.
Oh, shit. That was a long time ago.
Since the yellow kid in the newspapers, he's been coloring comic books.
Okay. I'm glad you explained a little bit more about the yellow kid.
Well, that's the name of the book.
Yeah, I know. Okay, I got you.
Anyway. But yeah, thank you so much for being on the show. Sorry, I forget names. It's
horrible.
I'm tired.
Three people, literally.
I know. I didn't say their names enough, but it was a pleasure talking with all you guys. We always appreciate having Fanbase Press on and getting like.
Did they give us any cool scoops about what's coming?
No, not really.
Oh, assholes.
No, but it's
just always, kidding.
It's always good having people from Fanbase Press on. And it was really cool to talk about like the colorization like process and like kind of what goes into his thoughts and like just the different ways artists work with him over time with Nick. So that was nice. That was a lot of fun.
And he's working on Heartthrob right now.
Yeah, he's working on Heartthrob, Deadpool, and Cave Carson Has a Cybernetic Eye.
Buddy.
Dude, I think he's working on like two other books.
So we need to get some signatures
from
him.
Skybound. Ooh. Like that he didn't talk about, but he told me it was coming out. So he gave me a little factoid that you'll hear obviously later. But so Skybound, the way it works, they want to have your first six issues done before they release it. And so that, you know, there's no delays, like
right.
There's a guarantee of no delays. He's like, so I have to remember, oh yeah, I got a tweet about this comic book that's coming out this week that I worked on a year ago. Like,
wow.
It's pretty interesting. So that was a good interview.
Cool.
So.
Well, Fanbase has Kinsey out right now.
Gamma Gals,
Hero Hotel, sorry. Penguins versus Possums. And if I'm missing anything else, I apologize, but I believe that's it.
Ridiculous list of podcasts.
Yes.
Like they got a lot going on at Fanbase, so check them out.
Hopefully we'll hook up at San Diego. There's so many people that have been like, "Hey, we should do lunch or something at San Diego Comic Con."
Like hook up like
I don't think so. Okay. I think they're married.
Oh, okay. Hey, you never know.
I'm sorry, guys. Gabe's an idiot.
Hey, they listen to this show. They know. They keep sending people our way and like intentionally coming on the show, so they don't have an excuse. They know.
Oh,
they know what
man.
They're in for.
What was Stefano Terry working on? Did I mention his book?
He was working on Kinsey.
No, that
then
was
Gamma Gals.
I think it was Gamma Gals.
Yeah.
Okay, I remember his name, but I couldn't remember if that's what his book was.
Yeah, he was.
And
cool.
I didn't want to leave him out.
So there's a few people that like I talk to on Facebook fairly actively since we've interviewed him,
right.
And like Yehudi Mercado.
Hero Hotel.
Like he and I
need
I
a
have,
sketch from him still.
He and I have like the exact same political views, so we're always talking on Facebook. So
I need a sketch from him and from Stefano.
Nice, that's awesome.
My Penguins vs. Possum one hasn't gotten up on the wall yet, but it's coming and it's awesome.
So
and I'm waiting on one from Sam De La Rosa. I'm fucking excited for that one. Nice. That's gonna be a Carnage.
Is that the Carnage one?
Yes, yeah. I got my Carnage from Frankie.
Nice.
When we were at Free Comic Book Day, and it looked fucking amazing. He put it on a big old canvas too, which
nice.
Is cool. That's the original that he's selling. Or well, mine was the original. But then I don't know if you transfer it to a paint
yeah.
canvas or how you do that, but it looked beautiful. Like it was like double the size of the original. It looked fucking cool as shit.
Nice.
And then he was doing prints of it and shit, I think. So it was pretty cool. I dig that one. And
I think it's cool.
Frankie
that your
in general
has
is
become something that he like
right.
is selling his prints. Like that's really cool.
Frankie in general is a cool guy. So I'm glad he's, and he did really well at Free. Everybody did really well at Free Comic Book Day. Tim Husky's like, fuck, I think I did better here than I did at Rocky Mountain Con. But as far as I know, everybody did some. Everybody made good money, had a good time. I'm
nice.
Hoping to get something done from I don't know if her name is Shauna or Shanna. I don't know how to pronounce it very well, but she did the
said
swamp
the guy
thing.
That bitches at me about remembering names.
No, I'm horrible with names. I have fucking Marika and Michael yell at me all the time about names, but those are famous people.
Yeah,
but
Marika
she,
and Michael are super famous.
She did you saw the Constantine Swamp thing?
Yeah.
She did that, and I was like, holy, like, I'd seen her do things in process, but I don't think I'd ever seen something
finished. Yeah.
And it looks fucking off the chain. If you haven't seen it out there, yeah.
She is a ridiculously good artist.
Very, very good.
I was looking at some of the stuff she posted on CCB, and it was unreal.
Yeah. So I'm going to have her do a Carnage for me, too. I'm going to try and do one full wall of Carnage.
Nice. I'm still working on my Conan sketchbook.
Nice.
That's my goal.
That's the one I forgot it to bring it out of my car on Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah.
And it was crazy busy there that day.
Right.
Very busy.
So, if you have an opinion on literally anything that we've talked about
anything.
On the show.
The Yellow Kid?
Yeah, The Yellow Kid, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, the Psych movie. I'm just trying to bring up the most random things that we've talked about. Feel free to hit us up. We'd love to have those conversations with you. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thinkingoutsidethelongbox, Instagram or Twitter at @outsidelongbox, or you can visit just our regular website at www.totlb.com. That will give you like our email address and all those
the
other
articles.
Things.
The articles we're doing. You haven't done an article
I
in
have
a long
not.
Time.
Yes.
You which will start, sucks.
No, you will start getting articles again this week.
Albie just put out a – I haven't seen this – it's a series. The 13 Reasons Why. I think that's a series, yeah. Right? I have not seen it, but he just put an article, a non-spoiler article about that series up.
Spoiler alert, hear, the girl commits suicide.
I that's the only thing I know about it. Like,
yeah,
I don't know
too.
Anything about the series aside from that, and that it's been – I've read articles about how
it's
like
been
it's
fairly
cool.
Controversial.
And then I've
yeah.
read articles about how you should never let your kids watch it. So I don't – I have no idea what it's about, but it's been pretty controversial.
Nice. I can't – I'm actually pretty excited to read that article.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I don't think it's very long, but it's pretty cool. He did one about what is it? Full motion video games or something like that. It's video games that incorporate like movies in the video game from old ones though. From I think it was like the 1970s or something. There was a Star Trek one, I believe, and a couple other ones where you would get to a point and then a movie would pop up. Essentially, I think is what it was telling you about storylines and oh, you just defeated whatever, and then you'd go through the game again. It was pretty cool. I like that one too.
That's really interesting. That sounds cool. I'll have to check.
So, and I've got one more person that I'm hoping will start that has nothing that you've never heard from that nobody who's listening knows about, but he writes he's actually gets paid to write for a newspaper. So
oh, that's weird.
No, it's cool.
I'm just saying that's weird. People get paid for stuff like this.
But he's a friend I've known for a long time, and I was like, hey, do you have any interest in writing? You know, obviously I can't pay you because we're fucking broke as a joke.
Exposure, man.
But but he's like, oh, that sounds awesome, because he likes our page, and I don't know if he listens as much anymore, but I'm hoping he'll. I'm trying to get people who we are not used to. We don't know their opinions on things. We don't, you know what I mean? People from
some
outside of our circle,
yeah.
Exactly. So that we can get different opinions on things. And I'm trying to give everybody free rein to write about whatever they want to write about, as long as it pertains to pop culture of some sort or
nice.
Fucking whatever.
And you can find all of those articles, all those yes. upcoming articles at www.totlb.com. You can also give us a call on the Michael Kirk Memorial Hotline. God have mercy on his soul.
Rest in peace.
His midget-loving soul. At 970-573-6148. We absolutely would love to hear your opinions in voicemail, and they get put on the show. So
yes.
Make a funny voice. That's always awesome, too.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
There are a couple of ways that you can support us financially. The first one is to go to Patreon at patreon.com/TOTLB. For small donations, you can get cool prizes, and we actually have more items that we need to work into that, and I need to find the time to update that.
Yep.
But the other way you can support us is going to amazon.totlb.com. I had to buy some chef pants for my new job, and I did exactly that. I went to amazon.totlb.com, and then I went into the search bar and searched chef pants and bought my chef pants, and I know that TOTLB is going to get just a little bit of a kickback.
And I bought my drone that way.
Exactly. There, pretty much anything that you're buying off of Amazon, if you just do that – if you do that in your Google search bar at the top first, it's going to take you to the regular Amazon webpage, but just use a cookie to give us a little bit of extra back. And I'm not 100% sure what the site for the store is. Is it?
Don't give it out yet. Because it's not live,
coming.
But it's coming.
Very soon,
yes.
We will actually have a store where you'll be able to buy some cool glassware
yes.
and some stickers. The glassware comes from...
And from Etch and Sketch Glassworks.
Like, I don't want to forget their name, but I love their stuff.
Chelsea and Skip.
Yeah, Chelsea talks with me on Facebook fairly regularly. They are really cool people, and mm-hmm. we're really excited to work with them. So,
and we're going to hopefully be adding a few things more as the time goes on.
Yeah.
I just want to... find more people that do stuff. I want to put my name on everything,
yeah,
which is kind of hoary, but I'm okay with that. I don't care at this point. I want to find, like, I've got a website for pens that are pretty cheap. I think, it's just.
That'll probably be more like a handout, though.
But it's also things that I like, that I want to use while I'm at work and shit like that.
Right.
I'm talking to, Pop culture pins.
Yeah.
Pop cult pins.
We're
gonna see if we can work something out with him. The machine he uses isn't his, and so that's kind of that's kind of the biggest issue. But I'm just trying to find cool and different ways to put our name on things and that are practical, whether it's a cup or whatever it's gonna be.
And with that in mind, if you're somebody that creates that sort of thing, you're a silk screener, you make posters, you're an artist that wants to just, you know, do something cool for somebody to get, you know, your name out there, you know, those sorts of things, we'd love to talk with you about partnering with you guys. Also, if you create movies, you create comic books, you do your own podcast, we'd love to have you on the show to do an interview with you, chat about whatever pop culture project you're working on. You know, that's what drives this show. What drives this show is we like to talk about the things that entertain us. And if you do something that you think is going to be entertaining, we want to talk with you personally about it. We love doing the interviews. We love talking with people like Fanbase Press, like Nick, to find out what those processes are like, because we don't necessarily get to participate in them other than the consumer end, where I'm reading comic books that Nick has colored in coloring book style. You know, those kind of conversations are great to have. Like, it's fun to find out the craft of the things that we love.
Right.
Most importantly, though, and this is going to be the final thing that I talk about before we wrap up the show.
Oh, man.
Most importantly, the biggest thing that you can do to support our podcast.
Side note.
Yeah, we'll get there. Let me finish my thought.
No, I know where you're going.
The most important thing that you can do to support our show is to go onto iTunes, go onto Stitcher, whatever podcast aggregate you use, and review our show. Give it a 5-star review. Or, you know, say whatever trash talk you want to say about our show, but give us the 5 stars. You know, 5 stars, worst show ever. Totally fine with that comment. You know, just we would absolutely love to get some more reviews of the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and stuff. That helps us get recognition within their system. And the more reviews that we get that are positive, the higher up in the ranks we can go to where we actually get the kind of visibility on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever, where people that we don't necessarily know and aren't necessarily communicating with directly can see that we even exist. So
the shitty thing is, because I knew where you were going with that, is iTunes, unless I have the app on my phone, only shows 3 reviews. So I've missed, in the past year, I've probably missed 6 or 7 reviews that we haven't read yet.
Oh.
And so I was going to go, I'm trying to see if I can find it some other way, but I was going to have one of my friends who I know listens write a review, and he pulled up his phone, and I was like, wait a minute, what the fuck are all these? Like, where did these come from? Like, I was so lost, but I got to find that, but there's some that we haven't read yet that I want to read. So I'm going to try.
Well, maybe next,
I try and read as many as I can so that we can.
Next episode, we'll do a segment that's just us reading iTunes reviews, because.
Oh, it's not that many, but.
We'll do 5 or 6 of them. That's like 20 minutes after we get done laughing at them and like talking shit about ourselves.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to try and see if I could find them, but I don't think I can, which is weird. I don't know why iTunes proper wouldn't fucking show them.
Because it's iTunes, and they want you to download their program, because that's how iTunes is.
Fuck iTunes.
No, don't fuck iTunes. That's how people listen to us. So yeah.
I love iTunes.
Anyway, with that said, please go review our show on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever podcast aggregate you use. We'd love to get some more reviews so that more people will listen to our show. This has been episode 62 of Thinking Outside the Long Box. I'm Gabe.
I'm Juan.
And we are getting closer and closer and closer to Thinking Outside the Long Box tattoos. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, so what do we go to the police?
Call the police?
Yeah.
Tell them what?
I'll tell him what happened.
It's a good idea, Dale. Oh, hidey-ho, officer. We've had a doozy of a day. There we were minding our own business, just doing some chores around the house when kids started killing themselves all over my property.
Let me do the talking.
That's a good idea.
You can't stay put.
Hey. Hello, officer. Good to see you again.
Yeah. We have had a doozy of a day.
A real doozy.
There we were.
Yep.
Minding our own business.
Yep.
Making some improvements to my new house.
The new house?
When all of a sudden, out of nowhere, these kids started killing themselves all over my property.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast, Baron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Baron Space production.